Monday night conference call?
Yes, it is.
Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, February 15, 2021. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off on our scripture reading last week. We're in the book of Matthew. We read chapter 25. We're going to be picking up in chapter 26. This is read by Alexander Scully.
Chapter 26. And it came to pass, when Jesus had finished all these sayings, he said unto his disciples, Ye know that after 2 days is the feast of the Passover, and the Son of Man is betrayed to be crucified. Then assembled together the chief priests and the scribes and the elders of the people unto the palace of the high priest, who was called Caiaphas, and consulted that they might take Jesus by subtlety and kill him. But they said, Not on the feast day, lest there be an uproar among the people. Now when Jesus was in Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, there came unto him a woman having an alabaster box of very precious ointment, and poured it on his head as he sat at meat. But when his disciples saw it, they had indignation, saying, To what purpose is this waste? For this ointment might have been sold for much and given to the poor. When Jesus understood it, he said unto them, Why trouble ye the woman? For she hath wrought a good work upon me. For ye have the poor always with you, but me ye have not always. For in that she hath poured this ointment on my body, she did it for my burial. Verily I say unto you, wheresoever this gospel shall be preached in the whole world, there shall also this that this woman hath done be told for a memorial of her. Then one of the 12, called Judas Iscariot, went unto the chief priests, and said unto them, What will ye give me, and I will deliver him unto you? And they covenanted with him for 30 pieces of silver. And from that time he sought opportunity to betray him. Now the first day of the feast of unleavened bread, the disciples came to Jesus, saying unto him, Where wilt thou that we prepare for thee to eat the Passover? And he said, Go into the city to such a man, and say unto him, The Master saith, My time is at hand, I will keep the Passover at thy house with my disciples. And the disciples did as Jesus had appointed them, and they made ready the Passover. Now when the even was come, he sat down with the 12. And as they did eat, he said, Verily I say unto you, that one of you shall betray me. And they were exceeding sorrowful, and began every one of them to say unto him, Lord, is it I? And he answered and said, He that dippeth his hand with me in the dish, the same shall betray me. The Son of Man goeth, as it is written of him. But woe unto that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It had been good for that man if he had not been born. Then Judas, which betrayed him, answered and said, Master, is it I? He said unto him, Thou hast said. And as they were eating, Jesus took bread, and blessed it, and brake it, and gave it to the disciples, and said, Take, eat. This is my body. And he took the cup, and gave thanks, and gave it to them, saying, Drink ye all of it. For this is my blood of the New Testament, which is shed for many for the remission of sins. But I say unto you, I will not drink henceforth of this fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom. And when they had sung an hymn, they went out into the Mount of Olives. Then saith Jesus unto them, All ye shall be offended because of me this night. For it is written, I will smite the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock shall be scattered abroad. But after I am risen again, I will go before you into Galilee. Peter answered and said unto him, Though all men shall be offended because of thee, yet will I never be offended. Jesus said unto him, Verily I say unto thee, that this night, before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice. Peter said unto him, Though I should die with thee, yet will I not deny thee. Likewise also said all the disciples. Then cometh Jesus with them unto a place called Gethsemane, and saith unto the disciples, Sit ye here, while I go and pray yonder. And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, and began to be sorrowful and very heavy. Then saith he unto them, My soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. Tarry ye here, and watch with me. And he went a little further, and fell on his face, and prayed, saying, O my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt. And he cometh unto the disciples, and findeth them asleep, and saith unto Peter, What, could ye not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray, that ye enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. He went away again the second time, and prayed, saying, O my Father, if this cup may not pass away from me, except I drink it, thy will be done. And he came and found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy. And he left them, and went away again, and prayed the third time, saying the same words. Then cometh he to his disciples, and saith unto them, Sleep on now, and take your rest. Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. Behold, he is at hand that doth betray me. And while he yet spake, lo, Judas, one of the 12, came, and with him a great multitude with swords and staves from the chief priests and elders of the people. Now he that betrayed him gave them a sign, saying, Whomsoever I shall kiss, that same is he, hold him fast. And forthwith he came to Jesus and said, Hail, Master, and kissed him. And Jesus said unto him, Friend, wherefore art thou come? Then came they, and laid hands on Jesus, and took him. And behold, one of them which were with Jesus stretched out his hand, and drew his sword, and struck a servant of the high priests, and smote off his ear. Then said Jesus unto him, Put up again thy sword into his place, for all they that take the sword shall perish with the sword. Thinkest thou that I cannot now pray to my Father, and he shall presently give me more than 12 legions of angels? But how then shall the scriptures be fulfilled, that thus it must be? In that same hour said Jesus to the multitudes, Are ye come out as against a thief, with swords and staves for to take me? I sat daily with you teaching in the temple, and ye laid no hold on me. But all this was done, that the scriptures of the prophets might be fulfilled. Then all the disciples forsook him and fled. And they that had laid hold on Jesus led him away to Caiaphas the high priest, where the scribes and the elders were assembled. But Peter followed him afar off unto the high priest's palace, and went in, and sat with the servants, to see the end. Now the chief priests and elders and all the council sought false witness against Jesus to put him to death, but found none. Yea, though many false witnesses came, yet found they none. At the last came 2 false witnesses, and said, This fellow said, I am able to destroy the temple of God and build it in 3 days. And the high priest arose and said unto him, Answerest thou nothing? What is it which these witness against thee? But Jesus held his peace. And the high priest answered and said unto him, I adjure thee by the living God that thou tell us whether thou be the Christ, the Son of God. Jesus saith unto him, Thou hast said. Nevertheless, I say unto you, Hereafter shall ye see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power, and coming in the clouds of heaven. Then the high priest rent his clothes, saying, He hath spoken blasphemy. What further need have we of witnesses? Behold, now ye have heard his blasphemy. What think ye? They answered and said, He is guilty of death. Then did they spit in his face and buffeted him. And others smote him with the palms of their hands, saying, Prophesy unto us, thou Christ, who is he that smote thee? Now Peter sat without in the palace, and a damsel came unto him, saying, Thou also wast with Jesus of Galilee. But he denied before them all, saying, I know not what thou sayest. And when he was gone out into the porch, another maid saw him, and said unto them that were there, This fellow was also with Jesus of Nazareth. And again he denied with an oath, I do not know the man. And after a while came unto him they that stood by, and said to Peter, Surely thou also art one of them, for thy speech bewrayeth thee. Then began he to curse and to swear, saying, I know not the man. And immediately the cock crew. And Peter remembered the word of Jesus, which said unto him, Before the cock crow, thou shalt deny me thrice. And he went out and wept bitterly.
Okay. Excuse me. All right, this evening we don't have anything particular to take a look at tonight. Well, I think what we're going to do is just take a quick look at the Committee of Safety Handbook. Last week we made a mention of this, I believe, and I noted that we would upload that handbook, and it has been uploaded. It's on the page Organizing Your County Committee of Safety. If anybody would like to open it up and look at it, we're going to be sharing that on the browser here tonight. And again, you know, we're not going to spend too much time in it. We talked a week or two ago about organizing your county committee of safety. And we wrote this book very specifically for a detailed plan on how to organize a committee of safety, all the necessary things that need to be done to do it properly, and the necessary framework of that committee and the work that it needs to do. Of course, it is imperative that we do organize these committees of safety in every county across America in order that we might have government by consent. Without doing this process, we can't have government by consent, because this process of the Committee of Safety will lead us on a grassroots level to work through with the committee man process, and also with the administration for the jury, rebuild the militia, and also get all of the people within our communities involved in their government activities to bring them back under the chains of the Constitution. So we're just going to take a quick look. I just want to cover some of the things that are in this book. Let's see, I guess we'll start off in the table of contents is really probably a good way to just go through this quickly. And again, we've been through a lot of this stuff. There are certain details in here that's in the book, and more specific details on how to do certain things than there was on the page the sharing that we had done a week or two ago on the committees of safety. So on the table of contents here, we have the Committee of Safety organization and how it's organized. It's an introduction and goes through the history of the Committee of Safety and committeemen, the Committee of Safety concept, and a critical mindset. Let me just take a quick look at the committee, the mindset. Let's see. Critical mindset. I'm going to read this because this is extremely important. This paper really should be handed out to all of the people when they come to your meeting within your county. And any new person that comes in, they should be handed a copy of this this handbook. So you should print out as many as you can, have them available for handing out, so that everybody understands the plan and can kind of catch up very quickly. You can also send people to the pages. Let me see, just to really quickly take a look at this other thing here is the instructional video conferences. Under People's Duty, highlight Organize Your County Committee of Safety, and then click on your instructional video conferences. And on that page is all of the different teachings we've been having concerning organizing ultimately, and a few subjects. And we'll be adding to this, all of our Monday night programs will be adding to this particular page, and you'll be able to click on them and view the video of our Monday night meetings on whatever the subject matter might be. But going back here to the critical mindset, number one, don't ask what are the limits of power. And this is extremely important that we understand, you know, we don't need any kind of a written law to do what we know is right. We need to do just whatever is just ultimately. But we don't need any kind of a law or any kind of a statute to give us any authority. We the people ordained and established this Constitution for the United States of America. So we need to do what we believe we need to do. And once we achieve the necessary structure within our counties and start to take back the controls of our government, because that whole process is all about taking control back of our government, to have government by consent to the people. So don't ask what are the limits of our power. Liberty knows no limits. We simply do what is honest and expedient. The people need no permission to act. Yes, we can make it up as we go and as we see fit. That's the prerogative of a king. Of course, we want to follow a certain structure and frame ourselves in such a way that we're compatible to all of the counties across the nation. So we have put together a framework, and we've worked this through with looking into our heritage and into our history to really bring all of this information together. We the people ordained and established the Constitution for the United States. We are the potter, and they are the clay. Hath not the potter power over that clay? Legislators are authorized under the Constitution, ordained by the people, to write statutes and codes enforced as law to control the behavior of bureaucrats, municipalities, government agencies, elected officials, interstate commerce, but not the people, whose rights are unalienable and cannot be legislated. Four, we have been elected to choose honest candidates for office whose only agenda is for the furtherance of liberty, security of our borders, security through empowerment, economic expansion, and the protection of the same without interference. And I probably should have put in here elected as committeemen, because really that's the focus of the committeemen, to totally control our political process. Number five, while in office, forget Republican or Democrat. We are not there to manipulate people by promoting agendas, but by promoting liberty. And number six, the office of committeeman is the most powerful office in the land. Exercise that power wisely, and we will have a wise government. A wise government is a constitutional one. Okay, so that's all I want to read in this section here anyway. Again, it's important to have a proper mindset, to understand that we the people ordained the Constitution. They, those who are our elected individuals or appointed individuals or hired individuals, they are our servants. They work for us. They are under the Constitution and are to be servants to that Constitution. We are above the Constitution. And the only law that guides us is the natural law, God's law. And laws of men do not control us, and we should not find ourselves under the laws of men, as we have been in our courts. As many who have been around for a while, they know that back in 1934, the Rules Enabling Act destroyed the courts that we the people have an ownership of. They have taken away our common law. They claim to have taken common law and equity and fused them together, and they call it civil law, which is Babylonian law. It's law to enslave the people. It's municipality law. It's not a law that we should be governed by, and it's not a law that we have put forward. We are not to be subject to no law by man, only law by God. And that's the government we have. Many people don't realize or understand that, but they need to really grab hold of that realization and take control of our government and take control of our courts. We need to control our courts 100%. They're our courts. Only two individuals in the court that are hired help is really like the sheriff, or who should be, you know, having a deputy in there, who is to enforce the common law, and of course a not a judge, but a magistrate. And all judges are magistrates, so a judge can sit in a court of law, but they're there only to document the decision of the court. And that court is to be controlled by the 12 jurors, which is also called the king's bench, and were to represent the king of the court, which of course is the creator. That's the law that we are under. So, looking back here at this paper here on this table of contents, we have an introduction to the Committee of Safety, organizing a Committee of Safety, Committee of Safety seal. Let me go to that page real quick. We should organize our committees, and we should have a seal. You can get a seal in quite a few places. I know I got the seals that I have. I got them from, Staples. But you can get them for a lot of different places. There's many places you can get a seal made up. And this is what the seal should look like. It should have your county on it. And it should say Committee of Safety. 1776 is when we covenanted with God via the Declaration of Independence to live under common law, under his law, in return for the blessings of liberty. And so 1776 A.D. should probably be the date in the center of that. And then, of course, your state, as you can see on this seal right here. On this page. So we give some very specific instructions on, you know, you can go up to Staples and just follow the instructions on this page and you can get them there, but you can get them in many other places other than Staples. It's been a while since I've gotten a seal, and the instructions, all the times I've gone up there to get seals, I've got my own personal seal. We have New York with the county seal for the committees of safety. We have the grand jury, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury seal. And so anyway, when I did put this together, these instructions were there. It may have changed because it's been a year since I've gotten one, but you'll work that out. We should also develop a letterhead. Here's an example of a letterhead. In my case, I'm Dutchess County, New York, Committee of Safety. You should have an address. You can get a P.O. box. And you'll go to one of those places that have those private stores that give you a suite or an address or whatever. And you should have a phone number and a fax number. We got a service. We'll take a look at that in a minute. But in any event, you should develop a letterhead, and any communications with any government agency or anything should be done on a letterhead. And if it's an official letter, which it should be or would be, probably, it should have a seal right down by the signature. You need to create a Committee of Safety website. We use meetup.com. And, of course, the cost of these things is paid for by the group that comes together, and you either get dues or take donations. People have to figure out what they want to do. If you do something with a membership dues, where people come maybe after so many months, they should then become a member by having some kind of a dues. You can charge $100 a year, $50 a year, or $10 a month. And this could be automatically done right off of the website. The website is set up for that, to be able to collect monies off of people for that kind of business. Or you could just pass the can at the meetings, and a donation can. And that should support whatever the overhead cost is to operate and, you know, maintain an address, phone number, fax number, and also whatever, you know, is necessary for printing, because you'll have to print out a lot of papers. There'll be handouts and so on. But anyway, we go through that process of how to get onto the website and how to create the website step by step. All that instruction is in this book. Virtual office phone system, this is what I've used. I've had this system for, goodness, over 20 years. I used it when I was in business. It's a really excellent service. It costs me $14.95 a month. You get a fax number. You can get incoming faxes. If you want to do outgoing faxes, I think they charge you an extra $5 a month or something. You get a fax number, you get a phone, and you get an answering service. It's a very, very well put together system. I mean, you can set all kinds of controls on the phones, forward the phones, whatever the number you work out to get. You can forward the number to different individuals throughout the week. You can share answering the phone calls, whatever comes in. Or you can set it up where it rolls over to one person. If they don't answer, it goes to another person and so on. Also, of course, there's a messaging system in it. So it's very professional, very well put together, and this is a really good system for people to use, the virtual office phone system. And here's the link. If you click on this link here to get your sign up to get your phone and your fax here, that link here, you know, we became a reseller for this process. So for everybody that signs up, we get a couple of bucks. It goes to National Liberty Alliance and goes in for helping us to pay the overhead costs. Now we go through instructions on your first meeting. We did go through some of this before, so I'm not going to go through that. But all of that information and detail is in here, how to go through, what your first meeting is all about, and how to organize it, what the focus should be. We also have meeting protocols, part of the process, and then the subject matters that should be discussed. We should always stay on focus on what the business is at hand of what we're doing. We are creating a committee of safety for the sole purpose of taking control of our government. We're going to help to encourage the growth of the committee men within our elected committee men that know the Constitution and will take control of our government by consent, at least through the political side of the process. Jury administrators, the Committee of Safety should be working to try to make sure we get four committee jury administrators within our courts, and also one paralegal, so this would be five individuals. That particular thing is the jury administration and the paralegal. It's a full-time job, and it's a professional job, and you get paid for it. Also, the building of the militia, talking about common law, equity, grand jury, the pettigrury, what is the Republic Review, looking at our founding documents, what our American heritage is, and so on. We have many, many, many different subjects that need to be addressed and looked at, and we need to understand this, and we all need to participate in one way or another. There is we covered all this, so I'm not going to get too much into a detail, but I'd like to repeat the warning that's here. It's a very important warning, and it says, be alert that your committee of safety is not hijacked. We've seen this happen before. I've seen this in a lot of different organizations that I've helped to put together, and there's always someone who comes in and, really with the intention to hijack the system. For ego purposes or for whatever reasons, who knows. But be alert that your committee of safety is not hijacked by some radicals with the agenda or an ego trip bringing in division. We don't usually talk about other people and other organizations in a negative way, but there is a danger of one, so we do bring it up and we do talk about it. And we had some serious problems some years back with this group of people, the Anna von Ritz movement. Which seems like a good movement, basically, when you first look at it. But really, they're getting involved with subversion, and it's taken us away. Their whole idea is to do away with the existing Constitution and rewrite it. Go figure that out. Anyway, who wants to rewrite the Constitution and create a new government structure, or the Man on the Land movement claiming that we need to declare our standing and file in it in our county record, you give up our citizenship, our driver's licenses, etc. The word citizen is used 11 times in the Constitution. The word citizen does not tie us to civil law. And that's important. Our founding fathers used that word, and it is in the Constitution 11 times. They have some things that are correct, and as you look at it, but it's really their goals are a major problem, major difference than from what we're doing. From our perspective, the existing problem is a fiction, and that existing fiction is fraud, and it's subversion. And it's been going on for 100 years, actually more than that, going on since 1776, as a matter of fact. The war, the Revolutionary War, never ended. We didn't completely win that war. It continued covertly for 200 years, 200 plus years. Now we can see it, and it continues now overtly. So Again, we have to be very careful on what we believe. We have to follow through and check the sources from whatever information we get. And if you can't find the source, this is too important of a subject for us to just run off the internet and believe what other people say and do this and do that and do the other thing. No, we have to know and make sure. We have to prove everything that we're doing. And National Liberty Alliance does do that. Okay, anyway, I'm not going to get too much more involved in that, but again, this booklet should be read thoroughly and followed through in order to organize. We have a plan on approaching the sheriff, and we discussed this before too, but I just quickly want to go through this. Before approaching your sheriff, the following must be accomplished first, and this could be accomplished by the second meeting. As long as you organize the first meeting correctly, cover the proper subject matters that you have to do, and put forth and out the necessary steps that we have to take to each of the individuals involved. Everybody will perform different duties and get things together and look at some of the things that's going to be coming up on meeting number two. And on meeting number two, you should be able to complete everything that's necessary. Well, it could be meeting number three or four, too, but the point is it's possible to have it done by the second meeting. And if it's done by the second meeting, then you can approach the sheriff. And we should hope by the time that happens that the sheriff would already have been primed. We already delivered him a book. We have, the campaign for constitutional sheriffs that we're running. We're asking people to donate a book to the sheriff. And you can fill that form out on our website right here. It's on the right-hand side of pretty much every page on our website, Government by Consent. And if you click on that picture there, you'll be taken to a page which talks about the book, and then you can click on the order form. And you can order yourself a book here if you want, and you can order your sheriff a book right here. So everybody should order their sheriff a book. Really, you should get a book for yourself, too. Because really that book covers pretty much everything, including the handbook, inside that book that we've put together, Government by Consent. But anyway, we need to deliver a copy of the book to all of our sheriffs, all 3,134 or so sheriffs. Actually, there aren't that many as we have counties, because there are some counties that have no sheriffs. Alaskan counties, for instance, has no sheriffs. We have five counties, is it five? One, two, three, four, no, seven. We have seven counties in New York that have no elected sheriff. We have Connecticut, eight counties in Connecticut that have no elected sheriffs. And there's a few other places that have no elected sheriffs, but most counties do. But we have to educate our sheriffs. So we hopefully will have primed that sheriff, as long as we are successful with that campaign, by the time people get to their second meeting, and which will take 2 months to get through, and start organizing, and ready to go address what you're doing there in that county to your sheriff, to bring him on board with you. It's important to first prime him. And we do have a group of sheriffs we're working with who are going to write a letter, so it'll be sheriff introducing the book and National Liberty Alliance and the committees of safety that are being organized in the counties. So they'll be kind of aware of you by the time you go about to address the sheriff. But going back to this handbook here, so before approaching the sheriff, the following things must be accomplished. Number one, county committee of safety has been organized and has had their first meeting, being introduced to the need for a committee of safety. At this meeting, a copy of a proposed Committee of Safety Charter and a Committee of Safety Resolution and a copy of this handbook should be handed out to your members for them to review and to prepare to address at the second meeting. Or you could do it at the third meeting or whatever, but it can be done by the second meeting. So within 2 months, you could be ready to go approach the sheriff. But you do have to organize first. And you do have to perform all these necessary things. Number two, fill the positions, chairman, co-chairman, secretary, treasurer, and the committee of correspondence chair. Even if some people hold those positions temporarily, maybe they'll hold the position, they're not interested in keeping it, and someone else might be interested at some point, and you pass it on to them. And these positions could be passed around at any given time anyway. The Committee of Safety Committee of Safety Correspondence Chair. Every county should have a Committee of Safety Correspondence Chair. Paul Revere was with the Committee of Safety. He was a correspondence, and he was working, of course, with our founding fathers as they were establishing and bringing together the organizing the United States of America. As they were forming states, again, it was the Committee of Safety that used to do that. And they communicated amongst themselves. They were structured the same way, so they all had a committee of correspondence chair. And we will have one here at National Liberty Alliance who will orchestrate information to other committees of safety chairmen and also share information between all the counties and so on and so forth. So there needs to be that communications, and we need to be structured all pretty much the same way in order to accomplish the goals that we're planning to accomplish. So at the second meeting, members should debate and adopt the Committee of Safety Charter. So you hand out the Committee of Safety, the proposed Committee of Safety Charter and the proposed Committee of Safety Resolutions, which we have already written up a basic framework of it. So people will get a copy of that. You all read it, then you'll come back together on the second meeting, and then you're going to hammer it out. You're going to decide what you want in your resolution and work out your charter. We strongly suggest you stick through the framework we put together, but there's a lot more information that needs to be filled in there that is required to be done by the people within the county. And you may not get this totally completed. You can always add to the charter, and you can always add to the resolutions in coming meetings. But you should try to hammer out one within a couple of meetings, two or three meetings, so that you can prepare yourself to meet up with your sheriff. Let me reread number three again. At the second meeting, members should debate and adopt a Committee of Safety Charter and a Committee of Safety Resolutions. Take note, you can add or change anything within these two documents at any time. Number four, sheriff to sheriff, contact and your sheriff receives a book, Government by Consent. So again, that's something National Liberty Alliance is working out with some other sheriffs, and we need people to donate a book for their sheriff. If we get more than one book for a particular sheriff, then we'll just add that to another sheriff in a county next door or whatever. But we have to get books to all 3,100 and whatever sheriffs there are. Sheriff-to-sheriff contact and your book receives the book Government by Consent. Establish a meetup group website. We spoke about that a little earlier, and there's information again in this handbook on it. Acquire a seal, adopt a letterhead, secure a P.O. box, and secure a follow-me phone and fax number. Once all those things are accomplished, you're well organized and you're ready to approach the sheriff. And, of course, you put all your information together and you have a meeting with the sheriff and you hand him a copy of the book and you invite him to the next meeting. And that's our plan to approach the sheriff and bring him on board with what's going on. There's a lot more involved here than that, but this is the basics, and we can get into details as time goes on, and I'm sure people have questions and so on, because you're going to eventually approach all of the governments within your county. You're going to approach the government on the county level, and you're going to meet up with them, and you're going to deliver this information to them, and you're going to invite them to the meeting and put on notice, ultimately, that things have been brought back to the power of the people. And that includes all towns, villages, and cities in your county. True consent of government. And let me go back up to the top page here. I don't want to look too much into this book, but just go briefly through it. Okay, we have true consent of government. We talk about the committeemen, how they expunged the committeemen in New York, how we will take back the republic, the committeeman test. We must be free and independent committeemen, and then what we're going to do once we're in power. Now, I was seeing a particular problem recently because a lot of people are talking about creating a new party. And just today I heard that Donald Trump's plan is to rebuild the existing Republican Party. And I was happy to hear that, because in order to take back this system, we have to take back the committee man process. And we need to do that through the powers that are already in place, the Democrat and the Republican Party. So we need to take both of those parties back. And in the process, after we've taken those parties back, there is a plan on getting rid of the parties. But first we have to take them back in order to have the power and the authority to do what we have to do and then make major changes. We have a plan for that, and we speak about the problems with the party and how this nation was never meant to have political parties and how political parties are destructive. Anybody that wasn't at that meeting, I think it was 3 or 4 weeks ago, where we spoke about political parties, you should go listen to that particular Monday program, because it gets into the detail. And George Washington had a lot to say about this. All of our founding fathers had a lot to say about political parties. They were all against them, just like they were against democracies. All right, jury administrator. We've got jury administrator plan in here. Militia, which is necessary to the security of the free state. The plan on rebuilding the militia. And the militia needs resolutions to be put together also. And they also should be doing pretty much the same thing as the committee is doing, in a sense of, for instance, they need to create, and when they organize themselves, and again, this is done within the organizing of the Committee of Safety, you want to bring this organization together and spark it off and get it going. They, too, need a charter and resolutions. And now we haven't written those up yet. I'll discuss that with a few people who have some more experience than I do on the militia, and we can then do that. Let's see. I missed that message. So, anyway, let me get back to the book. We talk about the Posse Comitatus, the security, no security without a Second Amendment, organizing the unorganized militia, plan to take back control of the parties, our founding fathers on political parties, and Robert's Rules of Order. So we do have the paper in here on political parties, so you can read that, and you can also go and listen to our Monday night program some weeks back on political parties. All right, that's about all I want to say about this particular subject on this book. But again, I want to repeat the fact that this book is on the page, Government by Consent. You highlight people's duty. Click on Organize Your County Committee of Safety. And let me see if I'm on the right page. That's okay. Here it is, Organizing Your County Committee of Safety. And here is the handbook. Just click on that button. And you can download it, print it, whatever you want to do with it. But again, it's 72 pages. If you notice, there are certain pages that are left blank, and they're left blank on purpose. And the reason why they're blank is because of the way it prints out. This is really planned to be printed out on both sides. Most printers these days, and some people may not even realize they have a printer that prints on both sides, but most printers pretty much print both sides, and you just have to click the right command on when you go into print. So people will work that out. But you should print this on both sides as a booklet. You'll save pages, of course, but nevertheless, you can print it out. It'll come out in 36 pages. And again, you should hand them out at each meeting. If people come in, they've got from one meeting and they've got a copy, they shouldn't have to get a second one. They can go up and print it themselves too. But you should hand it out to any new member that comes into the Committee of Safety to work with you in order to build up the program here to have government by consent within your counties. All right, that's all I have to share for tonight. I think what we're going to do, I purposely didn't pick a subject to get too deep in, because I wanted to try to catch up on a lot of the questions that we've had. So, Jan, you want to start going through some of the questions that we've gotten through email and see how far we can get? Maybe we can catch up on them. If you're with us, Jan. Hopefully Jan's with us tonight that we could do that.
Yeah, he's with us. He's just trying to reorient and get ready.
Okay, can you hear me now, Jan? Yeah.
We can hear you, Jan.
I hit unmute and it didn't. Okay, this one. First question. says, I'm currently on federal supervisory release, but my parole officer and his boss have been harassing and intimidating me to pay my entire $13,000 court fee. However, my sentencing judge ordered me to pay $250 per month until my $13,000 is resolved. Now my parole officer wants me to agree to a modified parole contract that not only forces me to pay my entire $13,000 court fee, but to also extend my supervisory parole. After doing some research, I have one of three options. One, agree to their modified parole contract. Two, according to 18 U.S.C. 3583E1, file a petition to my judge to pay my $13,000 court fee in return for being released early from my parole. Three, go back and do prison time instead of having to do supervisory release. What is the best solution?
No, boy. Well, I couldn't really advise you on that. I would think whatever the court's required is the bare minimum you'd have to do. If anything required more than that and you don't want to do it, you shouldn't have to do it. But you should be able to go to the court to be able to clear that up with parole or anything. But I don't really have much of a comment on that. I don't know how to advise it. Yeah, that's personal decisions. I mean, does... I don't even know if the person has, if they have $14,000, what was it, $14,000?
$13,000, yes.
$13,000. If they had $13,000 and they wanted to pay it off, you know, that's what I would do, just get it out of my way. But again, if it was a situation where you're going to, at some point, challenge the decision at a later time because it was unjust, then you want to pay minimum until you can get back into the court to deal with that. But that can't happen until we get just courts, which hopefully would be soon. So, okay, next question.
Okay, can you explain how affidavits work and how people can use affidavits when their rights are violated?
Well, basically an affidavit is an affidavit of truth. It's a statement of truth. And you're swearing to it, and it's a very powerful document because, first of all, if you lie in an affidavit, you could be held liable for perjury, so you want to be absolutely true in your affidavit. And when you apply an affidavit into a court, you will find that many lawyers, people who are represented by lawyers, they very rarely have the people do an affidavit. The lawyer may do some kind of a form of an affidavit and making the claim on behalf of their client, which again is hearsay, and that even though the courts are accepting that as if it means something, it's still hearsay, and an affidavit unrebutted rules the court. So if you write an affidavit and some individual rebuts that affidavit, and let's say you got 10 points in that affidavit and they only rebut 8, well then they've agreed to 2, those 2 points that they didn't rebut, then that's held as truth. So affidavit is a very important paper. And again, if people are represented by lawyers, rarely do they write an affidavit. And that could be a good thing for you if we have a just court, of course, where you can make the point and even get a summary judgment because they've admitted and agreed to, they acquiesced when they rebutted or partially rebutted, or if they didn't rebut at all, they've acquiesced to your statement of truth. Case over, done, move on. So that's the power and the authority of an affidavit. Whenever I communicate with an agency that's a corrupt agency, particularly the IRS, every letter I write to them is in the form of an affidavit, and I do get it notarized, so it is an affidavit. And so I'm already building a case against them by communicating with them, by getting all of my letters and papers in the form of an affidavit. So they're very, very powerful. Okay, next question.
Is it safe to write the words, all rights reserved, under our autographs on our driver's licenses, or are there legal ramifications?
I don't see a necessity to do that. I don't, I know people are taught that. I was taught that. I thought about doing that in my days when I was ignorant to these things, but I have no need to do that. I do have, look, I'm a citizen of the United States, or a citizen of New York, shall I say, in my case. I'm a citizen, and I have no problem stating that. I wouldn't use that word in court at this point because it can have a different meaning. You know, I agree with that. But that's a fiction. They've robbed that. It's all fraud, and it's not real. So it's a de facto process. But nevertheless, I have a driver's license. I have driven commercially in the past, and from time to time, in most throughout my life, I've you know driven commercial, and at this point in time, I still have a driver's license, and who knows, I might want to drive a vehicle in a commercial activity for some reason here or there. And so I've got it, and it's a good form of identification. So I don't think we should have to pay for those licenses, but they are for commercial reason only, and if you're not driving commercially, you're just driving your vehicle, you don't really need one. But you better have one until we get to the other side and get justice going, because they will put you in jail, and the fiction is really in power right now. So the courts are de facto courts, but the people believe that they have power and authority. And obviously so do the police departments, so they put people in jail for violating certain things. So people should be very carefully. But there is no reason to write those things. If I had to, when we go into the courts, if we had to make the point, we'd make a point and call it a fraud. But going through the exercise of doing certain things like writing a paper to declare that you're sovereign and filing it with the courts, and you know it's called making a declaration, and doing these things, getting rid of your driver's license and getting rid of your Social Security number and all these other things, which is really taking you out of the system, giving you no power at all because there's no way to get back in to take power, for instance, voting, things of that nature. But all those things, you know, it's just you could do all those things and walk into a court, and if you think you're going to click your heels and find yourself in a court of justice, it's not going to happen. You're still under the rule of these people until we get rid of them. So, you know, I wouldn't go through waste my time doing all those things. I'd put my time into an effort to change those things, and that's what National Liberty Alliance is doing. We're trying to change those things and to stop that craziness. And, of course, we see we're on the track of doing that. So, next question.
What is the sequential order of documents for filing a lawsuit in the common law, i.e. summons, complaint, affidavit, service, request, admissions, request for production and answer? We need information now.
Well, look, you know, they do have a process, and they do have the rules that lay out that process. The rules of the court was the rules of common law until 1938. In 1934, Congress passed the Rules Enabling Act, which allowed the Supreme Court to write the rules. Clearly, the Supreme Court did not write the rules. The Bar Association wrote the rules. And so they wrote the rules, and the Supreme Court agreed upon them. Eight justices agreed, one resigned. So it was signed by eight. It was agreed, it was unanimous by eight judges. And so they passed the rules. Right now, to get papers into the court, you kind of got to follow the paperwork. I don't have too much of a problem with it, at least the rules for writing the paperwork and getting it in. So, you know, it makes sense. It's logical. And we would probably continue that even when we get into common law. If you're going to file a paper, you know, you would go through the process. Now, there is you know, the Supreme Court has ruled on quite a few occasions some years back that the only thing necessary for a prima facie case is a affidavit. So really, you know, depending on what kind of case it is, only an affidavit is really needed. But you do have to serve it on the individuals. You have to have proof of service. You should have a paper that's very clear with the big word summons and make it clear on one page, telling them this is very important because if you don't respond within 30 days and of receiving this paper, then a default judgment will be taken against you. So that's the purpose of the summons. It's a one-page paper, so I definitely would continue with that. It's a good, and then get into common law, natural law. That process makes sense, and we do have to prove that we've made clear that this was they were being summons into the court, and we have to make clear, you know, that in an affidavit what it's all about, and our papers should have what's called a wherefore clause. The paper should lay out what it is that we're suing for or responding to, but what it is that we're suing for. And we should make it clear what our wherefore clause is. And the wherefore clause is what we expect the court to do. We're expecting them to enforce a certain, once we get a decision in our favor, that they're going to enforce, and this is what we're looking for. We're suing for X amount of dollars, and so the wherefore clause has to state everything in there that you're expecting the court to do. So that's pretty much it. So you have the summons. I wouldn't call it a complaint. I would call it an action. An action at law is a common law process, so I'd always use action at law. I would never use the word complaint or any other word. It's an action at law. And I think it's best to use the word against instead of versus. I think that is more proper, but either one of those will do. But again, you have to serve the person properly. You have to have a summons on top. You have to have the papers declaring exactly what the case is all about, the position, and then a good wherefore clause with what you're expecting of the court, and an affidavit attached to that. And you have to serve it onto all parties and file it into the court. It's not any more difficult than that. We did write a little booklet you could find on our website on that, and I think in the near future I might write a small handbook on that. Okay, next question.
Okay, I sent, this one is a little bit long, John, so bear with me. I sent an affidavit of objection to a verified complaint for declaratory judgment and action to quiet title, telling the court that I wish this object to take this action and that I wish that this case be dismissed immediately, telling the plaintiffs that they have to show cause by what constitutional authority the above said court acts and why the attached violations or complaint against the defendant should not be dismissed for lack of personal jurisdiction. On 1/19/2021, the defendant received a letter from the court stating that my affidavit of objection was denied for failure to follow MRCV number 9A. Upon calling the court, I was told that
I
had
to
file.
Did they say what that is?
No.
No, okay,
no, they didn't. They just said MRCV number 9A, whatever that is.
Yeah, it's probably some kind of a form, but go ahead.
Right, or procedure. Upon calling the court, I was told that I had to file a motion and serve it to the plaintiff, giving him 13 days to object to my objection / challenge of jurisdiction. Then, with his response, resubmit my affidavit of objection / challenge of jurisdiction. Something seems wrong here. The plaintiff can't object to me challenging jurisdiction, so what is the purpose of this? It seems to me like the judge is denying me my due process of law. Am I right? Is this enough to move to federal court, or should I just send the motion?
Did they say whether they started the case or the other party started the case?
No, he just said he received a letter on the 19th of January 2021. He didn't say when it started or anything.
Okay. Well, look, these rules, some of these rules with the paperwork flow and the procedures and notifications, they all make common sense. You can't argue with them. And even in common law, they would, it would follow that you can't go and say something and not give the other side, the party, the opportunity to respond to that, no matter how right it is. I mean, you could push the court for a summary judgment. For instance, I don't know in this case, but if you, for instance, if they responded to your affidavit and left a lot of things out, they didn't rebut certain things in your affidavit, for instance, and then you collect all that information that they didn't rebut, therefore they acquiesced. And if you can take that information and show that, hey, I just won the case, then you can push the court for a summary judgment, and the judge can make that decision because you're asking the judge to do that, and they should do that. And if they don't, you could take it to the appeal, you know, appeal it because, you know, they acquiesced. As far as if you're going to challenge jurisdiction, you know, the other side has to prove that they have jurisdiction in that court. Again, if let's say it's a prosecutor, then it's the prosecutor's job to make the argument in front of the judge that they have jurisdiction there, and then you have to make the argument in the other direction that they don't have jurisdiction. And, of course, first that starts off, and the other side's got to, you know, make an argument against that. So that's one thing. If you're doing a contract argument, you know, if there's an individual suing you in a contract and the court doesn't have jurisdiction, whether it's subject matter jurisdiction or personam jurisdiction, then you could make that point, and it's up to them to prove that they've got it, and then a decision could be made on a summary level. If it's not the proper decision isn't made, then you can go up the appeal system, because you are working at that point, you know, under an equity kind of a court, in the sense that you're allowing the judge to make a decision on that. And the only time in common law that I know of that, you know, that we would permit a judge to make a decision would be if you're moving through the process for a summary judgment. In other words, we're not even going to bother going to the jury. We're not going to argue the case because it's done. And we just proved it through the paperwork, through acquiescence. And I guess that's about as far as I can talk on that, because I would need more details to understand more of what they're talking about. But next question.
Okay. I recently attempted to add a Monday night question to your list, and I'm not sure if you addressed it or not. I do believe I can do a better job of formatting it as a question, so here I will try again. This has to do with the claims made by J. Russell Gould in this video, and he gives the video. It's about the David Wynn Miller syntax. Have you watched that video by any chance, John?
I'm familiar with the syntax.
Okay, my questions then are these. Have you reviewed the video so that you are familiar with his claims and supporting information?
No.
Could his narrative about the role of postmaster, the end of the third U.S. bankruptcy, the Florida Chads, and the presidential vacancy, along with everything else, add up and be legitimate, even if not formally acknowledged? And how
I watched a part of that particular video on syntax, and there's no necessity, in my opinion, to go through that. Truth is consistent and obvious. Court cases is to win a court case, you want to fill it up with maxims. Maxims are undeniable truths. They're factual in their face and cannot be denied or argued. And so if you could write papers and go through, in other words, look at it, when we write a paper, we go right down to the sources and, you know, where our nation was originated from, and whatever the law we're talking about, particularly in the Constitution or the Bill of Rights or something, or whatever the point we're trying to make. Not only does righteousness and logic obviously rule to make that point, just the fact that, you know, really all that is synonymous with maxims anyway. It's really maxims. Now, as far as the syntax, you know, I don't give any merit to it at all. I haven't been sold on that. If truth falls together in such a way that they're able to make that kind of a calculation and use it, I don't know that you can use it as a proof, but then that's the nature of truth, then I guess it falls that way. But as far as trying to go back and write your papers in such a way in that sense, I'd be more focused towards what is right and righteous and just, and just rest in that. I don't know that we want to get it any more complex than that. I think I'm not sold on that idea of syntax, and I don't think it's necessary to bring it to play. I'm familiar with some of the points that were made in that video, and those points can stand on their own. They don't need some kind of a structural, mathematical thing to make its point. That's about all I guess I could say on that. I don't know, maybe, I don't know if anybody else has, Gerard or maybe Brent, if they have any knowledge and want to respond on that, but that's all I got.
Okay. How is it that we, the U.S., did not get claimed by the Crown in 1999? If Gould's descriptions of national bankruptcy procedures, postal authority, and shipping are accurate, then something is amiss here, either in his story or in what has transpired since 1999 that is not being considered or disclosed.
Well, the people weren't ready for it. Look, it's a slow cook. I've been watching this since the 60s and the 50s. Well, I was very young in the 50s, but I have memory of things when I was young and conversations and different subjects and things. I remember hearing the adults talking about abortion and about Christ being removed from from Christmas and various other things that we understand today and for quite some time as political correctness, particularly. And so they have to demoralize us enough. They have to distort enough of the Constitution. They have to get more and more government actions outside of the Constitution to become more and more regular and just keep destroying us little by little, destroying the family, destroying us morally, destroying us spiritually, destroying us economically, and many, many other ways. And then they would, can move to the next step, to the next step. The bankruptcy and to try to make a collection on that bankruptcy, whatever is done has been done. A lot of that has been done in secret. But they certainly don't want to reveal that to the people yet. At some point it would be, but in 99 or whenever, it just wasn't ready. They've been trying to make this move for a long time, but that pesky Bill of Rights particularly has just become such a big problem to them. And that's why they haven't been able to make that move. And I think they were ready to do this in the 80s, but the people weren't ready. They weren't primed enough. They haven't destroyed enough. And in the 90s and then moving into 2000. And even now today, one of their biggest problems is the First and Second Amendment. They have to totally destroy that. They have to start to get a little twist on that so they can destroy it more and more and more and more. Just a little bit here and just a little bit there. And of course, they've done a lot of that with the Second Amendment, with their permits and permissions and licenses and all that stuff, and so on. But it's hard for them to chisel on those things because the people, it's so deeply embedded in the American mindset. So they still have more work to do on that before they have to do that. Fortunately for us and unfortunately for them, Trump went into office, and I don't think he's really left it yet, and I think he's got another 4 years to go, but we'll see how that plays out shortly. But nevertheless, now that Biden thinks he's in control, he's like overturning everything. They're moving so quickly, and this is part of the plan, I perceive. They're being forced to move so quickly to put all these things onto the people, and look what they're doing with censoring. I mean, it's become so obvious. I just had a conversation recently this week with someone who's never been involved in the political thing, but little things that have been affecting them have made them focus on this, and now they become political. What's going on here? What are these people? How they can do it? And they already know that they can't do it, and censorship is becoming obvious. Now, they're moving in light speed because they don't have a choice. They got a very small period of time to do this and put in effect because they need to do this quickly. They had a plan to take a little longer for this, but now with what's going on, they're doing it quickly. Now, with that in mind, I think that's all part of the plan that has forced this so that the people can see what's going on. So just look to see what's going on, and you'll see the problems is just being obvious even to the regular person who doesn't even pay attention to politics. They're being affected by it. There are jobs being lost and all kinds of things. The overturning, the not making sense of the border, what's going on there, taking down the walls, and, you know, or shall I say, reopening the border to some degree, opening, allowing people to come in. You know, and again, even though this isn't in the regular news, they do have a problem because it's communicated on all of the different communicational platforms on the internet. So that conversation takes place and videos are shared and so on and so forth. So there's a major problem with that for them. So 1999, I just don't think they were ready to be able to do it, so it had to be put aside for another time in the future and so on. But now they're moving at light speed. It's become obvious, and the people are seeing it. So I don't know what else to say on that. Next question.
Okay, can you please explain to me why NLA is no longer pursuing the joinder cases in federal court? This was really my only hope.
We're still taking joinder course, joinders. I don't know what they're talking about. Get a hold of Jim. It's intake. Send intake at nationallibertyalliance.org, and we'll still take joining cases. And we're still doing habeas corpuses.
Okay. Next. What is the update for the common law action of which I am a joinder for the abuse of power issues? Have we a decision? Please update.
Well, everything's in place that we've worked on. There may be some cases moving through we haven't completed on yet, but things are still moving forward and filed. They're rejecting or ignoring, and we just keep bringing more and more cases in. And when justice returns to the court, or the opportunity of justice returns to the court, that's when justice can be achieved. Until then, it's very rare to get a justice. We've had a few cases that, you know, that have worked out okay, particularly on a habeas corpus here, or maybe a closing here or there or whatever. But generally speaking, you know, they're hardcore rejecting it. But remember, the whole purpose of this whole thing is building evidence. And every case we join that joins with us, it builds evidence to make the point that the courts are corrupt, that it's a conspiracy, that the court here in this state and this county is doing it the same way a state in that county is doing it, and so on and so forth across America. So it is a conspiracy. And the conspiracy is spearheaded by the Bar Association. They're the ones that have put this whole thing together. And they're the ones that have created all this terrible legislation and has pushed through the Rules Enabling Act and has pushed through the Organic Act of 1871 and the 16th Amendment and the 17th Amendment and all of this stuff. So anyway, joining really helps the cause of National Liberty Alliance's case against the judiciary by showing the corruption in the courts and that justice is not available and that common law has been shut down. But again, it also holds in place these cases, along with the main case that National Liberty Alliance has filed, it holds a place so that when these judges are removed, either through or being arrest or indictments and arresting, or maybe being going through the process of removing them through Congress, then and we get just courts again. That's when they start to obey the Constitution at that point. That's when we'll get justice in these cases. Impeachment was the word I was looking for. Judges should be impeached. I don't know that a judge has ever been impeached. I've never heard of one. Not to say that it hasn't happened, but if it does, it's very rare because it's almost unheard of. But judges need to be impeached when they're in bad behavior. So that's the process, is impeachment for bad behavior. Either they correct their behavior and it's acceptable in some way or another, but generally, if they're in bad behavior, they are not obeying the Constitution. They're operating contrary to it. And so really, pretty much most, if not all, these judges need to be removed. So justice will come when we get to the other side. Next question. And the other side meaning we're on the side of justice and the courts have been cleansed and we have the Constitution reestablished, common law. Next question.
If I went to traffic court and offered to help someone get their ticket dismissed, I would state during the arraignment, I don't understand what jurisdiction this is. I would move for a dismissal since we are in an equity court. If the judge demands this is a court of law, I would move for a dismissal since there is no grand jury indictment, i.e. a violation of the Fifth Amendment. What do you think of this idea that any of us grand jury administrators could do for we the people? After the dismissal, I could talk to the defendant and tell him all about NLA and convince him to join. I'm interested in hearing how you think this Nisi Prius court case would go.
Well, look, at you know, when I deal with something like that, I tell them what jurisdiction they're in. It has nothing to do with me because they're code violations that apply to the commercial activities of the road, particularly, you know. And if you're not involved in commercial activities, then you can quote. First of all, when you get a ticket, they usually have a little code number on there. And it usually, I think it says TC, which means traffic court. So whatever that little code is, it's a two or three letter thing. It refers to the commercial codes, and that applies to commercial activity. And that I would let them know that's the jurisdiction they got going. It has nothing to do with me. I may have a driver's license in case I want to drive commercially, but at that time I was not driving commercially. I was driving my own automobile, and this has nothing to do with me. So I challenge jurisdiction, deny them. For me, it works half-half. Half of the time it works, I never hear back from them, and half the time I do. And at that point, you know, I pay the fine and put it into a file that I'll deal with probably in the future. When we get courts of law, maybe I'll go back and sue them all. But maybe they'll all be in jail, too, so I don't know. But that's it. Look, traffic court is obvious. It's traffic law. Has nothing to do with you. Next question. Jan, did we lose you?
My mute is slow and unmuting.
Oh, okay.
Do congressional bipartisan votes represent third party and independent voters?
Repeat that question.
Do congressional bipartisan votes represent third party and independent voters?
Well, I'm not sure I understand the question. The bottom line is that there. I presume the point is being made that there are independents in the Congress that are deciding to go a different direction, I guess. And you know, it's the majority rule there. That's the way it is. but I'm not sure I understand the question. Do you understand it?
No, okay. I don't.
All right, next question.
Can't provide any more insight on it, John.
All right, well, if they want to re-ask the question
right.
and make it more clearer, maybe next we can week. Respond to it. Yeah.
Next question. I hold a Canadian passport and a U.S. green card and have resided in California for more than 20 years without taking assistance. Could you please direct me to the appropriate procedures to become a California state national, if allowable?
Well, what you want to do is become a United States citizen. That is a power we gave to the federal government, to people that want to come into this country and or nation and become a citizen. Then you go through the process to become a quote-unquote U.S. citizen. Now, a U.S. citizen, there's nothing wrong with that. It's the price. We use that language ourselves, and it's in the Constitution, the citizen. But, you know, you then decide whatever state you want to live in, and whenever you plant yourself in that state, you're automatically a citizen of that state. And a week later, you can move to another state, and you're automatically a citizen of that state. So, you know, it's a pretty simple process of becoming a citizen. Just make the application and go through the process through the powers that we gave to the federal government. To my knowledge, there's no way you can become a citizen through a state because that power and authority has been given to the federal government to do. And so just follow that process. Becoming a national, goodness, I'm not even sure what that means anymore, to be honest with you. There's no language that I know of in the Constitution for that. So I don't even know what that means, really, to be honest with you. I know a lot of people talk about that, but it's not a necessity. And if you give up your citizenship, you know, they can throw you out of the country at any time, and you'll be a man or a woman without a country, because you're not a citizen of any other place where you're going to have to live at sea or in the airport, you know. Remember that movie? What was the name of that movie where the guy lived in the airport? Tom Hanks played in that. But in any event, that's all I got to say for that.
The court has blocked common law out. How can you get in there to sue them devils?
Well, look, that's what we're doing. We're making the process. We're using the common law process, ultimately, using their forms, because it's okay to use their forms or the ideas. I change forms all the time. You know, you don't have to go according to their forms exactly, but, you know, you have to follow certain things that are illogical and obvious, so why not use their forms when you can? Make some changes if you feel it's necessary, and go forward with that. Now, once you've applied and put everything into the court, you can only do what you can do to make your case and through that case prove that they're denying you due process in a court of law. And that is, you can go after that individual and sue them in a federal court. But that really, success on that is difficult and will probably be received later. But you should make your position and your paperwork now. And if they beat it up, you can send it to the appeal and hold on to the position that you opened. You know, you keep focused on the point that it's really a common law case. There's a possibility you can win in the federal court if you're challenging that kind of a situation in the lower courts, in the state courts or county or whatever, city or town courts. But it depends on the judge. But it's very hard to find a judge that'll do the right thing. So, again, it's getting into the battle. What we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance, filing papers, building the case, collecting the evidence, showing in the courts their denial of due process, their denial of common law, which is part of the due process, of course, and taking, you know, at some point in time, resurrect all those cases to get justice. When, again, we have to get to the other side. And a lot of this is our fault. We, the people, fell asleep and didn't get up to take care of the business that we need to take care of. Now, it is true, we're ignorant to these things. We weren't taught in school, and we don't know what it is. But we can find it. You know, National Liberty Alliance has found what is necessary and where we should be as a people in the courts and in our government. And we're making the case, and we're keeping, you know, we keep nailing the papers to their door, nailing them to the door, nailing them to the door, nailing them to the door. It's like, you know, going around the city, you know, each time blowing the trumpets, and eventually the wall falls. That wall is going to fall, and justice is going to prevail. Because at the end, justice must prevail. It will. All right, next question.
Any update on the United States common law grand jury hearing for the Supreme Court justices per the January 2nd, 2021 filing under case 1:16-CV-1490? Did you say on the 8th of February, 2021 show that you were going to talk about that in 2 weeks?
Yeah, we, you know, there's a process that we want to go to take that another step that we didn't think too much of, but someone had brought it to my attention, and I need to, I still have not boned up on it. The problem for that has been that I've been just too busy getting too many other things that has to be done. But I will eventually get together with that person and look at that other process that they're suggesting, and I think we're going to try to execute that process. I can't really talk too much about it because I don't know enough to be able to articulate it well, and so I can't comment too much. I just have kind of an idea what they're talking about, and it looks good. But I haven't been able to go there. anyway, even if we don't go that route, you know, our papers still stand and everything is ready, and we're just waiting for the hammer to drop, the house to be cleansed, and common laws to be reestablished in the courts. And we will be pressing very hard at that point for that purpose once the house is clean. So that's what we're waiting for. We're waiting for the military to do what they have to do. All right, next.
Okay. I went to the National Liberty Alliance website. I'm looking for an example of how we the people can express with various elected officials to remove orders and rules that they have passed. Is there a specific format? Does it involve filing with the sheriff's office? For example, courts, schools, public buildings, and so forth.
There is a there is a plan to restore the republic. Right here on National Liberty Alliance, anybody that's looking on the browser, we're looking at highlighting people's duty coming out to restore our republic. Click on that tab. And you're not going to be able to do this as one individual. It's a plan. And it has to do with really working with those constitutionally minded legislators, particularly within our respective states. And so this is the plan, and if you want to get involved in that plan, you can watch the videos and read the information, and you can make contact. I believe at the bottom of the page is a contact. You know, we don't have a contact here. We have had people for this, but you have to get a hold of G.R. Mobley. Francine, are you listening in? I see you're here. Let's talk about this to make sure we get some kind of a contact on this page for GR, for anybody that wants to work with what's called the Republic Review. And that is going cleaning up the federal constitution, our federal legislation, cleaning up all of the garbage out of that, which is a huge job and it's going to take a long time, but the states have to be involved in this. This is a job of the states, not the people. And we need to push our legislators and school them if we have to and watch them carefully and to make sure we get rid of all this unconstitutional legislation. So, but we'll get a contact up here where people can email if they to GR, so if they want to get involved in that. Anybody who feels that they can be a quick learner in whatever it is they want to get involved with, in this case it's the Republic Review, and is able to articulate themselves to communicate and talk with individuals at different state levels. So we'll get a contact up on there. Next.
As you know, jurisdiction can be called into question at any time, even after a judgment, right?
Absolutely.
So how can a person best challenge jurisdiction after a judgment? In a case here, a house was sold. File a jurisdictional challenge directly on the case number or file a new case in that court?
Well, you could try. No, I'd go into the federal court. If you're challenging jurisdiction and they've moved you to jurisdictions unknown, that is a... That's really an effect on your unalienable right to have the right of due process. And any court that can't give you due process is a court that is in jurisdictions unknown. You know, they may call it a certain court, but they're all over the place. Nobody even knows what they're, you know, they even violate their own rules. So who knows where you're at. But you're not going to get anywhere. I mean, you could possibly do it and get a win in the federal court on this. But it'd be awfully difficult and doubtful. I would suggest do a joinder with us, connect your case with us, and when the time comes, it'll be brought back up again, because these cases that have been abused and people haven't had due process has to be reheard, and people need to be, restored back to their original condition from the point of being, abused by these courts. So, or you could do it on your own when we get there. You know, you can wait until we get there. I don't think we have long to wait. I think it's going to be soon that things are going to be brought to correction. But I'm sure it's going to take some months after that to really settle things, and things come to settle. But as soon as the arrests take place and things happen, we want to act very quickly in the courts and start moving in the courts. So anyway, that's all I can suggest. You probably wait. You can join your case with us, or you can wait and do it on your own. You could try it now, but chance of achieving your goal is slim. Next question.
Okay. We have asked a couple of attorneys for their subscribed oath of office. Two have not done so, one of which was defended by the judge saying that the Utah Supreme Court requires bar licenses. And so I rule that he is a lawful attorney in my court. How does a person require oaths of office on the record of the court and, more importantly, kill the case when they refuse to provide that lawful requirement? Any memorandums available, please?
Well, you can demand oaths of office by anybody who should have one in a court case on the record, and they should have to supply that information. And if they don't, well, that's a good question on that, where you go from there. I don't know that there's anything you could do right now, because no judge and no court is going to assist you on this, because they don't even want to give you their oaths of office. So I don't know that it's going to go anywhere. Again, a lot of these things, like if you had a case coming up and you wanted to sue somebody, particularly as far as a government is concerned, IRS or someone like that, unless it's an absolute emergency that you need to do it in order to prevent them from going forward with seizing your property and stuff. Other than that, I try to hold off as long as possible, again, to get to the other side, get to the point to where the courts are just again, because the courts are not just. And you might be fighting really hard and wasting a lot of time and probably will never achieve it, at least not now. But on the other side, of course, you can achieve justice. So, again, it's a waiting game at this moment, but there are different things you could do or try to do. For instance, if the IRS is coming out after you and you feel it's at a point where they're going to pounce upon you, you need to strike first. And striking them first puts them in a position of defense, and they have to cease doing everything, and that can hold them off from destroying your life. So if it's that kind of a decision, then of course you should go forward with the courts. And you should stretch everything out for as long as possible, because really you're waiting to get to the other side until the courts are returned to justice, because right now there is no justice in these courts. All right, next question.
I'm sorry, John. That's the end of the questions.
Oh, thank you. Okay. All right, we got up with all of them then.
Yep, we got through all of them.
Hopefully next week we'll just have a few questions and we'll be able to try to keep up with them, even though we might be teaching something. Gerard, are you ready to take the board here? And is Brent here?
Gerard was here earlier, yeah.
Yeah, I saw him before, but I don't see him at the moment. Calling Gerard. Is Brent here? Anybody seen Brent? Brent, are you here? Terry, have you seen Brent?
No, I have not.
Okay. All right, well, let's try to keep an eye out for Brent, and we'll go on to an open forum right now. One more call to Gerard. If anybody sees Gerard, let me know, and let's try to connect so he can take the board over, pass things over to him. But until then, we'll start taking some questions. We'll take our first caller here. Brown, you got the mic. Go right ahead. Jeffrey?
Hello. Yes, I'm calling for my father. He's Pastor Emeritus Jeffy Brown, and I'm his daughter, Melissa. Right. I called Thursday, and I was suggested from Terry to try to call and come in on Monday's forum. I did try to send a question out to Jan, but it might have been too late because I didn't know exactly how all this works, because we're still trying to figure how this operates, because we just start learning about National Alliance. I believe it was last week. So I could try to bring up.
What's your question?
Yeah, I'm not sure if you had a chance to listen to the broadcast Thursday at all, but basically, just to give you a little perspective in case you didn't, my father, he's a pastor emeritus, so like the elder of our church, and our church was relocated, and we had a contractor that performed substandard work. We gave him several opportunities, but instead the contractor ultimately left the job and broke the contract. We paid him 3 out of 4 payments from an escrow account. So the contractor ends up trying to sue my father for the remaining last payment, even though he didn't finish the work and he did substandard work and he walked off the job. My father ended up having to go back and forth to court on behalf of the church because that's how the contractor put the suit in against my father, not the church. And the contractor basically had him go to small claims court where the judge had it so that there was no one would owe each other any money. Then they end up going to arbitration because the same contractor waited till the last minute and appealed it. And my father had to represent himself at the arbitration level and came. And basically when he represented himself, he ended up being able to show where there was just cause for his statements about the discrepancies with his work. We also had a structural engineer to show that it was merit behind what we had to say about the work being substandard. So the contractor was supposed to end up owing money to my father, but instead what happened is the contractor waited till my father ended up going back into the hospital because he ended up he's a 100% disabled veteran, and he has a whole list of different medical conditions. But he was at the time going through cancer treatment, and the contractor basically took advantage of my father and my mother and the church. And what happened is that after they appealed the arbitration matter, then they took it to the Court of Common Pleas. And at the Court of Common Pleas, what happened is the attorney we had to represent my father and the church, he came not prepared, and he ended up making the judge upset, so we lost the case. And the contractor, after we lost the case, created fraudulent liens, which he sold to a conservator. And I'm not sure if anyone that's here heard of Act 135, but it's an act that is in Pennsylvania, but it's only primarily being used in the Philadelphia area. So what happened is that after the liens were sold, we didn't even find out anything about these alleged liens or judgment that he placed. But he tried to not only go after the church property, which is the only property he worked at, but my father's personal property also. And the question that we have is that my father ended up just finding out last week that we end up having to go back to court to deal with this matter relating to a conservatorship, because a conservator said that my father, you're making me lose my thought. Let me finish this. I'm sorry. My father, he ended up having oral surgery, so I'm trying to talk on his behalf, but I'm trying to inform what's going on because it's a little bit of a complicated situation. But basically we tried to file electronically on our own to request a continuance, and we went through all the process so that it was accepted to be added to the docket. And my father had his doctors follow up and sent letters from the VA hospital showing his condition, which the courts already knew about, but with his ADA letters. But instead, we haven't heard anything from the judge, but the judge just mentioned that we had to send all of our evidence to her email for us to do a Zoom hearing this upcoming Thursday. And the attorney we had that was going to represent us held on to our paperwork for a whole year. And then he also I believe, around Wednesday or Thursday when we found out. He informed us that he cannot represent us. So it looks like we're now back at square one with having to represent ourselves. And my father, he just had oral surgery, so he can't even really talk to defend himself. So we're trying to find out if there's anything we can do about our request for continuance, because it says that on the court docket that it was accepted, but she didn't make a decision if she was going to grant it to us or not.
Well, look, usually they will grant. I mean, they have to have a good reason why not to grant it. But, I mean, you know, you have a good reason for it to be granted, so I don't see why they wouldn't. But I'm kind of surprised that you went through the court and ended up. How did you go through the court and end up in arbitration? You said you went to small claims court, okay?
Yes, the contractor took us, or took my father, to small claims court.
Right, and now the small what amounts of money are we talking about? The small claims, is that just trying to get a piece of it, what he thinks is owed, or is there a lot more? I mean, what kind of money are you talking about?
The whole project was around $21,000, and he ended up being paid $16,000.
Okay.
And he was trying to get the last portion of the work, even though he walked off the job and didn't finish the work.
Well, again,
and then,
you know, one of the things people need to really understand something about contracting, and if you don't understand enough about contracting, it's always good to hire a construction manager or something that can handle it, or sometimes your architect or your engineer. What was it, an extension or something?
Church ended up basically being relocated because it originally was taken through eminent domain, and when we relocated to the new site, what happened was the property ended up being vandalized about two or three times. But my brother, he's also on the line, and he has something to add.
I don't have one. I was just telling myself.
All right, I apologize
okay,
about
well,
that.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised that they, you look at arbitration. When you go into arbitration, you usually sign a paper or an agreement that there's no appeal to it. Whatever the arbitrator decides, that's it. And to appeal it, it really ends up, if that paper was signed, I've never heard of it not being signed, because they won't hear it without that agreement. Yeah. At least that's my experience. And so if you've signed that paper, you know, there's no court that's going to hear the case after that. Their judgment is final, unless you can prove bias or some kind of a problem with the person who arbitrated it. Was there a problem with the person arbitrating it?
No, it wasn't. But the contractor waited till my father was back in the hospital and he was hospitalized.
Mm-hmm.
And his attorney waited till the last day to be able to appeal it, even though that form was signed. And it ended up being trialed by another judge in the Court of Common Pleas, even though my father's just a trustee, not the owner of the church. And the church was sued, but he went after my father.
You know, contracting and cases can get very complex because there's so many things involved, and, you know, and what kind of, you know, documentation was taking place during the job. And you know, again, when you work with a contractor, And I presume he was the general contractor. She went straight with a general contractor, I presume. And then he probably subbed out some of the work and done some of the work himself, I presume. And when you put all that together, you know, the payment schedule should be very clear at what point persons get paid. And if there's a denial within that process, and it's for good cause that you didn't pay them, it has to be documented and noted to all parties involved, and that they have to do certain things in order to get that next check because they failed. And if you haven't kept those kind of records, it's going to be very difficult to win in the court, because contractors can be pretty slick and they understand their business and they can articulate things that you may not be able to defend against because you lack the knowledge. And that's the case of most people when they go to hire a contractor. They lack the knowledge. But it's really a lot of logic if you really think about it. But, you're past that, and you've gone into a court, and then now what happened in the court before you went to arbitration? Did you guys win, or the other side win, or what happened? Or did they just convince you to go to arbitration?
Well, first what happened was at small claims it was a split decision, so no one would owe each other anything.
Okay,
and the contractor wasn't satisfied with that, so he was the one who pushed it. to arbitration.
Who wasn't satisfied with that?
The contractor that was suing my father.
Well, did they appeal it?
Yeah. Well.
Okay. Yeah, but I mean, why did you accept going to arbitration if you?
We had a young attorney that didn't really understand, so it ended up going to arbitration.
Yeah, it sounds like a mess, and I don't have too much, you know, I understand all of the processes you went through. I'm so surprised, you know, that you went to arbitration and then went going to arbitration to get back into court. You know, from my understanding, that's almost an impossibility because, what did the arbitrator decide?
And the arbitrators, they unanimously mentioned that my father was in the right, the contractor, his work was not, it was substandard.
Okay, so you won by the arbitrator.
Yes. That's correct.
Okay, so now you've done your arbitration, and now who pulled you into court? The contractor pulled you into another court, into a Supreme Court, or what?
He brought it to the Court of Common Pleas.
Okay, so your position should be pretty simple. This case can't be heard. It's already been decided. It's been decided twice, as a matter of fact. And you should make that point, and that's the paperwork. You shouldn't have to argue anything here. The bottom line is produce the paperwork of arbitration, and in there is the agreement. This is the arbitration's decision is final. And unless one side can prove in the court that it was a biased situation or something illegal took place, as long as those two things didn't happen, they can't take it back into court. So it should be a cut and dry case.
And that's how we felt, but the part gets even more complicated because even though it got trialed a second time, even though we showed we won with arbitration, because of the situation with our attorney upsetting the judge, he didn't want to see any more of the information.
Then write a paper and have the judge recuse themselves because this is cut and dry. And if the judge makes a decision, you have to argue only the point that you have to argue. And the point that you have to argue is the fact that this case has been decided. There is no appeal from it. That's it. End of subject. And if that judge doesn't go along with that, then because you were brought into that case where you don't belong there, you appeal it. You should win on appeal. There's no real, I don't see a need for, you know, it's not like you're going up against the institution, against the government or something where they maintain the status quo. This is a case that the judge really shouldn't have any, you know, shouldn't bother them whether they go this way or that way and should hopefully just do the right thing. And if you force the application of the law, they need to obey that application of that law. And if they don't, the appellate court should do it. And then the Court of Appeals. I guess you got an appellate court and a Court of Appeals probably there too, right? Is that what they call it?
I believe so. I believe so in Philadelphia.
Yeah, so you got two steps to go. I wouldn't worry much about it. I would push for summary judgment. Write a paper on a summary judgment. You know, you could probably get a lawyer to do it for a couple of $100 or $500 to write a paper. And you're just pushing for a summary judgment. All you need to do is take the papers from the decision of arbitration, which has the contract and agreement coming into that arbitration, and you apply that. You take that and you write a page or two moving the court for a summary judgment to dismiss on the grounds that this case has already been decided and appeals are not possible in this case. It's already agreed to go forward with that. The judge already knows that. They already know there's no appeal from an arbitration, an agreed-upon arbitration. So that's
really
a cut-and-dry, simple one. It's a simple one.
Well, the part that is complex is the judge from that court, for the second time it was trialed, he put a judgment against it from that. We just found out recently. In 2019 is what I meant by recently. Mm-hmm. And he never sent us any paperwork regarding it. And now a third judge is trying to get involved. And a conservator saying that this contractor sold a fraudulent lien to them concerning our church. And because we didn't pay this judgment, they're trying to say they invested.
Okay, look, what you need to do, and again, you know, you have to have a little bit of knowledge on how to write a paper and filing it and serving it and, you know, these are the ABCs of law, and it's not difficult. It's not you don't need to be a brain surgeon or a rocket scientist to do this, but you do need a little time to research on how that's done. And either that or you pay a lawyer, And I couldn't see why a lawyer can't go in there for $500 and just write the paper and file it. It's a cut and dry case. Now there is kind of a problem here that I don't understand, and that a judge would make a decision against you, and it was a year ago or so, or a year and a half, whatever it's been, and then you didn't get the paperwork, and that's kind of confusing, and I don't know how that plays out because I don't know the details on that. So, but really, you can do a counter lawsuit, a counterclaim. Did you do a counterclaim?
The attorney we hired was supposed to file one, and we found out he hasn't, and they changed the judges that were involved
well,
in the case.
Then you should get a hold of the bar and make use of some of their services and report this person and ask them what you can do, what's going to happen, what can I do. And you should report the guy to the bar. I don't know that they'll do anything, who knows, but...
They mentioned we could take him to the disciplinary board, but we would have to have an attorney to file the suit for. And we did talk to the disciplinary board about it, but and they agreed that we would have the right to do that.
All right. Well, look, in order to deal with your problem, I mean, if I don't do this for a living or anything in the sense, you know, we're doing everything we're doing here to save the nation, but we do help people in certain cases. But your case is involved in the sense that we'd have to look at everything and try to figure out what exactly happened and then write a paper in order to file it into the court. But depending on how complex it gets, again, it's very simple from arbitration to the fact it can't go no further. And that's where you want to go, okay? That's your point. That's your argument. Anything that has happened after that was unlawful. If a judge made a decision contrary to the arbitration and turned things against you and filed, that's unlawful. You could just go right back. You want to stay on point because, you know, lawyers will get you confused. They'll put a lot of smoke and mirrors into the game and get you going here and there, and you never really get down to the business of what this case is all about. The case is very simple. This case has been decided already in arbitration. It is unappealable, and I want a summary judgment. End of subject. That's your position. That's your argument, and I would file that in the court that way. If you can't do it, you should be able to get a lawyer to do it for $500 or something like that. Shouldn't have to cost much. It's only one paper to be filed, and it's just a paper of law. It's got to be, should be pretty easy, I would think. So.
Okay.
Anyway, that's all I can offer you on that, but you should, no matter how this case comes about, everyone listening to me, really, you should learn how to file papers and the process of papers, because someday you're going to need to do that. Why go get a lawyer when you could do it yourself? Nobody knows the case better than the individual whose case it is. Now, lawyers will tell you different things. Oh, only a stupid person would try to represent themselves in court. That's because they're looking for the leverage of really applying their strategies, which is not very just to begin with. Look, I've been in court many, many times, or arbitration on contract levels, And I always, whenever I approached anything, I looked to see what was right and what was wrong. You admit to what's wrong, you pay that toll, and you fight for what's right, and you expect to get that, and that's how you fight a court case. You know, that's my opinion anyway. Where a lawyer will try to win everything, you know, but there's got to be give and take. But your case is done. It's been decided. Arbitration over. End of subject. And you can appeal that up to file your papers, demand a summary judgment, and if the judge doesn't give it to you or tries to move in a different direction, appeal it and move it up to his boss. That's what I would do. Okay?
To file the papers for a summary judgment, and if that doesn't be accepted,
The case has already been decided. There's nowhere to go with this case. You've had arbitration. This is the decision. You filed and you put a copy of the arbitration papers in there along with the agreement contract of that arbitration, and you reference it to certain pages or whatever. Exhibit 1 and Exhibit 2. Exhibit 1, here's the agreement we went in. Exhibit 2, here's the decision. And referring back to Exhibit 1, this case is unappealable. we want a summary judgment, and that's it. Get it out of the court. Okay? All right. Thanks for the call. All right. Okay, let's take our next caller. Kevin, how you doing, Kevin? You got the mic.
Hi there, John. Can you hear me?
I sure can. By the way, Gerard, are you back yet? Has anybody seen Gerard yet?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, you want to take the controls here? Let me just finish up with Kevin. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah it's just a quick question for you. There's been quite a bit of delay on the government by consent book, and
yes.
I wanted to find out from you, do we have a more accurate date as to when the book is going to be available so we can get it, and I guess you can get it out to
right.
all of the sheriffs?
Yeah, what we have right now is I've changed the dates up there, and I just put February, March, because I don't know when. I did talk with my, not directly with the people involved with the editing of it, but it's the group that is working. The way they work it is they got individuals who kind of manage the different processes. But in any event, I wanted to know when the formatting would be done, and that should have been done the end of last month. It should have been done in January, the end of January, beginning of February. And it hasn't been, and I made a complaint to that. But the past week, I wanted to press harder on that. But the past week, I've been so involved with so many emergencies and the papers that had to get done, I haven't been able to really push back hard on them. And I'm planning on doing that hopefully tomorrow, and try to get an answer and a decision, because now they've fallen behind on their contract. We had an agreement. This is supposed to be a fast-paced book, you know, get it through the process fast. And I paid in advance every time. I got the monies out to them and paid them got my book. When they sent it back to me after they did a lot of corrections and stuff, I went through the whole book, had it done within a week and back to them. And it's back in their court. And like I said, they should have finished it by the end of January, but they did not. So now I'm pressing hard on them this week and see where I can go. But they still haven't given me, they haven't even given me a price on the book yet. It's just general idea but really haven't got a solid cost on the book itself, really. But I'm going to push hard on them and see what I can get. This is my first experience with getting a book published. So, anyway, that's
okay.
Where we're at. I have no other answer. But it should be coming shortly, I hope.
Yeah, huh? A lot of us out here waiting for it. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
No, I look at it from another perspective. If the book came out, is this a good time for the book to hit the stores? Would they even allow it to go into the store, considering the government by consent is the name of the book? So I look at it being God's hand. It's going to come out at the right time. I'm pushing hard to get it done quickly. But on the other hand, there's things dragging it along, and, it'll be what it'll be, but it'll be soon, I hope. So.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Gerard, you got the board. One more asking for Jan or Terry. Have you found Brent? Is he with us tonight? And if you haven't found him, I guess we'll continue on with the open forum, Gerard. You got it.
Okay, we got Ross is next. Go ahead, Ross.
Hello, this is Ross. I'm wondering, how can I change my from being a straw man to affidavit of law?
Say that again. How can you change your straw man to what? Well, you're really echoing. I think you're too loud on your mic. Try it again. Say this.
Ted, how can I change my birth certificate to a affidavit of birth?
He wants to do something with his birth certificate. Yeah.
You want an affidavit of something?
Okay.
Well, see, look at.
Affidavit of birth.
That's all going to go away here in a little while. They put us on a birth okay. certificate system because that's how they took control. See, the people became the money. We were broke. And they accepted the people, and that's why they had to collect birth certificates for our debt. And that's where that other thing that happened in 99, what happened is we went broke in the First and Second World War. We went bankrupt. But in 99, we went bankrupt again, and England was set to come over here. And the reason the Postmaster General is so important is because all commerce runs through the Navy. Like, the President has control over the Marine Corps and the Army and that type of stuff. But the commerce runs through the Navy. That's how goods get moved around. And so they closed. The post office was bankrupt. When the government went bankrupt, the post office in Pennsylvania, which is where it was set, went bankrupt. And England was going to pay the debt, and we would have been under the England flag again. We would have been chattel to England. And that's what this guy did. He ran over there and mm-hmm. claimed it and filled out the paperwork before anybody knew what was going on. But nevertheless, when Trump puts this new system in, that's all going to go away because that was all against the Constitution. It was all, you know, it was done by contract, I guess, but nevertheless, it violated our personal rights. They turned us into slaves. So when this new system comes out, we're going back to that 1776 Constitution. All that stuff won't be the straw man, and all that will know. There won't even be income tax at that point. You know what I mean? So you don't have to worry about all that. In my opinion. You know, we'll see what happens. But I also heard that they're talking that this new money system is going to go in within days, maybe even hours.
And I agree with what Gerard's saying. You don't have to really worry about all that stuff right now because as soon as things happen, the whole world's going to change. Reality is the way one perceives it. And right now everybody's perceiving a fiction. And there's going to be a really big shock when the truth comes out and the reality of things come out. It's going to be a huge change. So,
well, it's going to be hard for people to get their head around it. I'm sorry, what?
I already have that around my head anyways, because I know it violates the Constitution anyways.
Well, look at the whole... Can you hear me still? I think I...
Yeah, no, we can hear you.
Yes, I can.
Hang on a minute. I don't hear anybody. It's a stupid thing doing. Hang on.
All right, while he's working on that, what was your question again? What were you saying?
Okay, I think I should be able to hear you now.
I don't hear anybody.
Can you guys hear me?
Well, we can't answer you because you can't hear us.
Something happened here.
Maybe someone can give him a toot on Skype and let him know that we're not hearing him. All right, what was your question, Ross? Try that again because I'm not
okay.
getting it.
I'm not on Skype. I'm on my phone.
No, I understand. What's your question again? I'm trying to understand you. Try it again.
It's my bus. I know that
I can't
the bus
hear
certificate
any of you guys.
Violates the Constitution
Let me
anyway.
See if I lost.
So I
don't know. Everything's showing normal on this.
Most people.
I don't know.
All right, hold on a minute, because I'm.
That's about.
Can someone mute Gerard and give him a note that we muted him until he fixes his speakers? Because I can't hear the person asking the question. But try it again, Ross.
I hear you.
Yeah, but I'm trying to hear and understand you. Say your question again.
I said, how can I get rid of the birth certificate from the state of California? Because I was born in the state of California.
You want to try to get rid of your birth certificate?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, look at. That's something you shouldn't have to worry about right now, okay? Because until we get to the other side, all that's going to disappear, and I'm not sure exactly what will work out with that. But I wouldn't waste time trying to get rid of your birth certificate. it's not going to be helpful anyway to do that, because then you're going to go to the next step, I presume, and try to get rid of your Social Security card, which is all going to be gone soon anyway. Not necessarily Social Security, but the connection to the IRS. So, again, I would wait it out. A couple of months, things are going to change. And it'll take you a lot longer than probably a couple of months to go through that process. But we don't teach people to do that anyway.
You're holding that in a book.
What was that? Can anybody...
C-I-R-T-H.
I-R-T-H.
It's B-I-R-T-H. Book.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
David, the book, means they say when you were born and what parents you were born under, and that. Have research that have been about different affidavits.
The word he's saying is birth.
Right. Well, I don't know what he's trying to ask for, though. I mean, if he's trying to get rid of his birth certificate, we don't teach anything like that. We don't, that's going
to... I want to replace it with an affidavit of birth. That's why I was...
An affidavit of birth?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I don't know nothing about that, or we haven't looked into anything like that, and we need to come to... You could go and do something, I guess, with a notary, but I don't know even how you would write it up, and I don't know the purpose of that at the moment. And again, you know, the birth certificate problem will be settled eventually, but I don't think there's any reason to do anything about it at this moment in time, and I don't have a plan or an understanding of what to do with it at this time until we get to the other side to see how things work out. And the other side being that, we get our nation back, we get our government back under the control of the people, and that's what we're working on. So.
Okay, I have another question that my county doesn't have a community safety leader yet. And no one has organized the community of safety in Clackamas County. Okay.
Okay. Well, again, you should try to get a hold of other people and work together to get one started. And we have all the instructions up on our website. Most counties don't have committees of safety. We do have people starting committees of safety. Let me take a quick look to see how many we've got going at this point. Hang on a second. Right now, we have 30 committees of safeties being organized out of 3,130 or so. So people are starting to build them. And if there's not one in your county, and chances are there isn't, you're going to want to start working and studying to build one and get together with other people and start discussing it and get it going. Go to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight People's Duty, and click on Organize Your County Committee of Safety. And that's what you need to do.
Oh, you have to also talk to the district leader, too.
What was that?
To my district leader, district one.
I don't understand what you're saying. Try it again.
District leader for the National Alliance.
You know, you're coming in and out. It's like, I don't know, you're talking on a phone or on a computer? What are you talking on?
I'm talking on a phone and I'm in a valley. That's why it doesn't work well.
Yeah, it's not a good connection. It's just like you're coming in and out, and I'm not understanding half of your words. So, try one more time.
I have a speech problem, too. That's...
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just not getting it. So, why don't you try calling back in on another way?
You want me also, if I ask you a question, probably... to the write the question on the website, and you can answer that that way.
Yeah, if you want, you can send your question to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org if you want to ask it that way, and then we'll reply to it probably next week. Okay?
Okay. Sorry, my letters are that place for my phone anyways.
I didn't understand that again.
It's the same. My letters, my reception is very bad. Right.
Yes.
There.
Yeah, that is very bad. All right, we're going to have to move on to another person because we really can't understand much of what you're saying. And if you want to call back or send a question to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org, and we'll answer that next week. Any questions coming in, unless Jan gets it and can give it to us. But other than that, we'll answer it next week, okay?
Thank you, Ross.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, you're back. Go ahead, Gerard. You got it.
Okay, we got Anthony from Florida. Go ahead.
Yeah, my first question is, for the grand jury, I believe I read that there was over 3,000 of them already?
No.
For the grand jurors?
No, there's 3,150 counties, and we need 4 administrators per county, which is, you know, that's a lot. I forget what it is. It's like 16,000.
Yeah, it's about 15,000 plus. Right. Actually, we also need, we added to that, you know, we were looking for secretary, but we're adding to that a paralegal secretary. So it's 5 people, 4 administrators and 1 paralegal secretary who will also learn to be an administrator and cover and be an administrator too anyway. So, but anyway, that's what we're looking for, 4 and 1, 3,000 counties times 5 is 15. We're looking for about 15,000, 16,000 people.
And by taking the government by doing the government by consent, I guess you could, that course.
Yes, that's the beginning. You have to take our civics course. You have to take the government by consent course. You got to take the militia course, and then we're writing a handbook, and we might create another course. I don't know, but we're definitely writing a handbook, and that will be the qualifications. But I do think we might create another course over time as soon as we get the time to do it, you know, solely and specifically for the individual that wants to be a administrator. Now, we probably won't post that course per se, but people who have taken all the courses and going through the process, then we'll probably require them to take some course at some point in time. You know, the other thing is I'm not sure whether we have this in our civics course, but you should listen to the trial by jury by Lysander Spooner. You can find that on our website under education. I don't know, does anybody remember whether we added Lysander Spooner's trial by jury into our civics course? We might have added that in there.
It was on, I saw it on the menu yesterday.
So it is in the
Pacific
course.
I don't know if it's in the particular course because I was looking elsewhere. But it is.
Well, if we have the listing trial by jury, and especially if we said Lysander Spooner, then it's in there. So, but I don't. In any event, we definitely, anybody that's going to become an administrator and work with the juries definitely needs to listen to that. And a lot of our course will probably be questions coming out of that particular. What would you call it? We have it in written PDF form and we have it in audio, so you can listen to it on audio and follow it on PDF. But we'll probably create a lot of the course out of that particular paper.
And these positions are for later on.
The positions are as soon as we can get them going. We have to get to the other side. Push the court to take control of the court, and we need to be preparing to take those positions. So as soon as we achieve that, then people need to get into that, and you know. So we need to be preparing now to take that. I would believe that you know, sometime this year, these positions should be being filled.
Yeah. So, but you're basing this on what happens with Donald Trump, President Trump, or?
Basically, we got to get back to the rule of law, and yeah, that's what he's doing.
Yeah, Trump is working on that. I mean, the only other thing is if they push us to a revolution again. I mean, other than that, and this is a revolution anyway. Look, this, the revolution, the war, Revolutionary War was never ended. You know, it continued covertly. Now you're seeing it. It's overt. We're seeing it, and it's got to be finished. And that's what Trump and the military is working on. So we have to wait till we get to the other side of that.
Okay, gotcha.
So we need to be prepared. I mean, we need to prepare now. So, but back to you, Jaron.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Anthony. Okay, next we have Ken and Barbara. I don't know what state you're in.
The prosecutor have anything to say. Well, he's never the prosecutor because he never proved that on the record either.
Right.
So the prosecutor stood mute.
Hello.
The court have anything to say. Court stood mute. As I said,
hello.
The only person
can you hear me?
Court. I dismissed this case.
Sounds like he's listening to a
and
tape.
And I want the release of the order of the court to me immediately. Court, give me my order. There you go. You just took over the court.
I'm the only person left in the court?
That's right. I'm the only person left with authority in this court.
Sounds like he's on a call with somebody else.
There's nobody left.
The administrator's abandoned his post. I'm the only person.
Yeah, take the next person. He's
yeah, Philip Harris. Go ahead. You've been unmuted. Philip. Can you hear me? I hear nothing. Philip Harris. I don't know which state you're from.
I see Terry sent me a message that Brent is here. So if Philip doesn't respond, maybe take Barbara and maybe see if Brent wants to talk.
Okay, I don't hear anything on Philip's. It's like dead air. Let me try Barbara. I'll mute Philip again. About 1,000 here. Barbara, go ahead. You've been...
Hi.
Hey.
Thank you. Thank you, Gerard. This is Barbara from New York. I have a question. I first wanted to ask what you said about a new money system within hours. Can you just tell me what
well,
you
that's,
know?
Well, that's the new system that they're going to put in that's going to be backed with gold, by gold. I don't know if they're thinking about cryptocurrency also, but we don't care about that. The main thing is we go back to constitutional money, which is silver and gold. And I heard that they got the bills all printed up. You know, I hear rumors and stuff, but right now, at least Charlie Ward says that the head of that's putting in that particular system, and there's two factions out here, you know. There's two resets. One is the New World Order reset, and they definitely want cryptocurrency. They want to control everything. And then you have the constitutional reset that Trump and the military are pushing. So I guess they've been working on it quite feverishly, and he's claiming that the word is that they're getting ready to put it in very quickly, sooner than you think.
So,
he said days or hours. Now, what does that mean?
Uh-huh.
I don't know how soon that's going to filter through the system, but that's a big deal. You know what I mean? That means our money will appreciate. I mean, will actually be worth something. They're going to have to replace your fiat money, and I understand that they're saying that anything that has to do with pensions and Social Security, they will trade it off one for one. In other words, it'll be worth the same. But not everything is going to trade one for one, you know.
Well, what about just cash in the bank, a balance in the bank?
I don't know what they're going to do with just cash in the bank. You know, I think they're going to want to try to trade it off one to one. But the thing is you won't need it one to one because I think the new money is going to be worth so much more anyway.
Well, that's so the key, I think.
I don't think you're going to lose. In other words, they're not going to give you a crappy dollar for a good dollar. You know what I'm saying?
I think what they're going to do is they're going to work out the ratio at the point of what the inflation is at this point, at the point that they make the changeover. And let me give you a quick example okay? If you go into, a gas station or someplace, drugstore, someplace that has, let's take candy bars, okay?
Uh-huh.
And they got a, I just saw the other day they got a musketeer. I was lusting for a musketeer, but I'm away from candy, so. But anyway, they $2.15 for a musketeer candy bar.
Mm-hmm.
Well, back in the 50s and the 60s, that was a nickel. Okay, that's what that candy bar cost, was a nickel. So the ratio of that is, 20 nickels to a dollar, so you got 43 nickels to one. The ratio would be 43 to one in that case. This is the case with everything. I got a bills when my parents died, my mother died, there's some papers I found that... bills that she had gotten from a lawyer back in the 50s, and it was $1.50 for this and $2.75 for that. I think the whole bill was $6 and change, okay,
uh-huh.
for some service that a lawyer did, okay? So imagine that. The value of money was big, and even in the 50s and the 60s, the dollar, there was inflation, but the dollar was, I think... I did a paper on this a while back, and we can probably go back and look, but I'm thinking that, for instance, an ounce of gold back in the early 60s, let's say, was probably like about $175. But it should have been, $20. So the point is the ratio between silver and gold would be 20 silver dollars for $1 in gold, or an ounce of gold, either way, however mm-hmm. you go. So it would be a $20 gold piece. But it would be an ounce of gold. 20 ounces of silver would equal 1 ounce of gold. That's the ratio relationship and its norm. Now, you take inflation and work things out. If silver is $1,400 an ounce, okay, the ratio should be 20 to 1, but that's 1,600 to 1. I mean, so that's a problem. Of course, silver has been, reduced very, very low, because it's a necessity in the marketplace, like copper, so they got to try to keep those metals low so the economy keeps moving. And so gold raises a little higher than it should be, and they try to balance things out somehow. But it's all a game that they're playing. It's all monopoly money. It's not real. So there's going to be a ratio. Figure it out at the time. Let me suggest to people to save change, because change is U.S. currency. It's a U.S. coin, and it must give you face value. So if you have a nickel... Let's say you have $20 in change. Mm-hmm. Well, in the market, when they do the rate, if you got a $20 in change, that has got to be an ounce of gold, okay? Because that's the ratio on coins. $20 in coins, U.S. coins would equal 1 ounce of gold, which would be a $20 gold piece. Now. Nickels, for instance, nickels have the original value that it had back in the turn of the century, in the 1900s, the 2000, and even going into the 1800s. The nickel has been 75% nickel and 25% copper, and that has not changed. It's the only coin that still has its true value. So I would save nickels. For every box of nickels, you got $100 in a box of nickels. So, how many rolls is that? 20, 40, 60, I guess. I think they're $2, so they're 50 rolls. But in any event, $100 in nickels, if it holds its true value of face value, because it's a U.S. coin, it must be given in a U.S. coin, then that's 5 ounces of gold. So get nickels, mm-hmm. save nickels. And that is probably the best way. Or, of course, go out and buy silver. Silver's going, I don't know what silver's going for right now, but maybe...
It's going up, but it's still, it's still below 30. It's like 27. It's been bouncing.
Yeah, I know last I looked, the Morgan silver dollar was like, I think it was 24, 25 bucks. But a lot of your junk silver, you might be able to get a little cheaper than that. But they all have true face value in it when you have a...
Well, that's spot price I'm giving you. That's Kitco yeah. spot price was up 27. You can't get 27 when you sell it. And you can't buy it for 27. You're going to buy it for about 28 or 29.
Right. And if you're buying an ounce, you're paying full price on that ounce. But if you buy a silver dollar, which is 90% silver, and you're getting it for the 90% silver price, but its value is full blown because it's face value on the U.S. currency. So that would be true value. But the point is this, is that if your silver dollar cost you, let's say, $20 or $16. Let's say $20 because it's easy math. So let's say your silver dollar costs you $20. Well, you divide that into, let's say, 1,400 or whatever gold is going for. Okay, so you can do the math on that, and that would be the ratio right now between silver and gold. But when they go back to the gold and silver coins, that ratio must return back to 20 and 1. So your huge amount of money. If you got $1,000 in silver that you pay today $1,000 for, you know, it'd be 20,000 or something to that effect when this takes place. So your best investment right now is buy junk silver, which is the old silver coins, dimes, quarters, half dollars, silver dollars.
I thought that with the reset, with the gold, if it was to be a gold standard, that the gold was going to be revalued at a set price, and it was going to be somewhere between 5 and 10,000, and that would
well again in the defunct dollars it would be valued at that. But bear in mind, just think about the power that the American dollar had before all this inflation took place.
They would really revalue the money you've got.
Huh?
They would really revalue the fiat money that you have now?
Well, they'd have to give you something for it because it has to have some value, in, you know, and it would be probably a heavy ratio. You know, I don't know what it would be. Again, you know, we could try to do some math and figure it out.
Well, technically, it's not worth anything. You know?
Yeah, that's true. But
it's not worth the paper it's printed on. I mean, the dollar's worth was 2 cents. I don't even know if it's still 2 cents.
But
probably
they're
going to
give you some value. And I would say that's very close. I would say the ratio on a dollar, you're going to get 2 cents on the dollar. But don't think that 2 cents is nothing. 2 cents is a lot when you go back to true value.
Well, she's right. If you have gold, it's going to go up. You know, 50, 100 times. If you take that gold in and then you turn it into the new money, it's going to be, you know, it's, well, they're not going to give fiat dollars back, though.
No, but if you use your fiat dollars to buy gold and silver now, that's your best deal right now, is to buy gold and silver, because you're going to get real money. And when that inflation goes up, your gold and silver is going to be much more powerful as the dollar gets more and more destroyed.
Yeah, and silver is due to go up even more times than gold is right now.
I remember...
Because there's an actual shortage of silver.
I remember, you know, going to the movies when I was a young kid, and, I don't know, 75 cents, 65 cents, whatever my mother gave me. It was, you know, you'd go to a Saturday matinee, you'd spend all day at the matinee. But that 60 or 70 cents that I had to go to the matinee would get me in there, get me popcorn, get me soda, and still have maybe a nickel in my pocket for the candy store later on in the day on a Saturday.
Only,
I remember that very clearly.
That's only because you didn't have a girlfriend.
Yeah, that's true. I was too young
then
for
it. Then your dollar would be worth 50 cents, don't you know?
The last ratio figure, I did some paperwork on that, and the dollar was down to 2 cents. And I'm pretty sure you're probably, and it may even be a penny right at this point, like Gerard says. So you might get 2 cents on the dollar.
Can I ask one more question?
Yeah.
Or is it just the time? I recently, about a week ago, I saw Dr. Rashid Buttar's video on the COVID test, the PCR test. Do you know that doctor?
Yes.
Yeah, and it was really disturbing. It said, Gerard, you said that it had, he doesn't know for sure, he believes that they're putting the COVID vaccine on the COVID thing that they insert into your nasal cavity.
Yeah, they're putting the nanoparticles on the Q-tip, and then they shove it all the way up in your nose, and they,
yeah.
and they hit the cranium, that thin bone, so then it goes in the brain, and so it's like you got vaccinated.
That's horrible.
And okay. The trouble with those vaccines is they're going to set you up for what they call a pathogenic priming. So if you can get the first one, people are dying and taking the first one. They're having anaphylactic shock and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But some people have no symptoms. They get minor symptoms. But by the time you get the second shot, what happens, you can have no symptoms, not great symptoms anyway, and get better. But within the next 2 years is what they figure. If you come into contact with the regular flu, the wild flu that's out there,
uh-huh.
It's gonna set up a cytostorm in your system. You're gonna die. Nobody's gonna survive it. Now, the other thing I want to say, just real quick, since you brought it up, is this is not a vaccine at all, because the vaccine they have never pulled out COVID. Matter of fact, they don't have a sample of COVID. The whole thing's a lie. It never existed.
It really is
the emperor has no clothes. And and they're going to prove it. And these guys are going to be in big, big trouble. But nevertheless, this vaccine that they developed, it's going to go into your body. It's going to go into the DNA, and there's no changing it. So in 2 years, these people are all going to start dropping dead with this cytostorm, and, you know, their story is going to be, oh, it's a new mutant strain. A new mutant strain of what? It was never even there to begin with.
Right.
It was the common flu is what people were getting,
okay.
Is all.
My question, go ahead. Well, I knew all about this, and I have two children in their 20s, and I begged them not to do this. And they did it anyway. I don't know, you know.
Look, right now they're saying that it's irreversible because of the way that it messes with the DNA.
Yeah.
But who knows, you know, what else they'll figure out later. They're going to have to figure something out, because hundreds of thousands of people have taken this shot. Because if they don't figure out how to get out of that, we're going to have a lot of people dying in over the next 2 years from this.
The other thing is
I want to just tell you, they can never require that you take this, and there's a reason why, because it's experimental. They didn't even do any animal testing on this, and every time they tried to make a vaccination for the common cold, which is what COVID is.
Right.
The cats and the ferrets, and they use cats and ferrets because cats and ferrets are susceptible to this disease, as are humans. So they're the best test subject. They all died.
Yeah.
So this time they bypassed the testing and put it out anyway. So what do you think is going to happen? But anyway, nevertheless, it's an experimental shot. So because of Hitler and Nuremberg and what the Nazis were doing experimenting on the people, they made an international law that says that you're not allowed to give anybody an experimental shot without informing them and without getting their consent.
Does that apply to the U.S. too, even though we didn't sign the Nuremberg thing?
No, it applies everywhere.
Okay.
Everywhere.
Our
Constitution guarantees that too, besides the fact. But they cannot force you to get it that way, but they're going to force you in another, and they know that. And so what they're going to do is they're going to say, you can't go to school, you can't ride a bus, you can't do this. You know, eventually we'll get the China system where they'll take your money away. You won't even be able to shop unless you get the shot. But they're not going to go door to door and hold you down and give you that shot. That's a lie. It's not going to happen, because they understand that it's that egregious, and the laws are already in place to prevent that. You know, and so all you got to do is stick to your guns. There's going to be no policemen at your doors.
Okay.
You know, that type of thing. They come to your door now. You didn't quarantine, and you came in contact with this person and that person. So it's as bad, if not worse, right now. I mean, with this fake COVID virus, with the cops, I don't think it'll get any worse than that. You know what I mean?
Is the COVID test? One son who had the COVID test once. I had another one who had it two to three times, because they insisted on it. Is that as bad as the actual injection?
I don't know that. I really don't have any data on that. But there's different tests. Some of them, they swab the mouth, and that's not the same thing.
I know. We don't have information on this because they're trying to keep everything quiet. I mean, are all the swabs put into the nose going to be?
I'm telling you, some of them they're doing in the throat.
But I know. But if it's
and now
in
they're
the
saying
nose,
you can do it anally. Imagine that.
Yeah. Well, if it's in the nose, can you be pretty sure that they've harmed you with the COVID vaccine?
Well, I don't know that that's the case. First of all, they stick it up there because they want to get it onto that plate, that thin plate, so that
right.
it goes into the brain. I don't know what that's all about. I haven't heard any data on that. I haven't done any research on that. I do know that they got those nanoparticles on there, so they must know that they go in. Now, what percentage of the people actually get that and it starts growing in them, I have no idea about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I saw an article, I'm not sure what I saved it for myself. It was an interview with Judy Mikovits, and she was talking about the COVID test with the vaccine and saying that there are certain things you can do to lessen the chance of it harming you. So I'm going to try to go through that. I don't know. I just think it's horrible. And my older son, so, you know, they're in their 20s. I was always thinking, oh, the worst thing in the world would be to have little children during this time. No, having kids in your 20s is the worst.
Yeah, because they can make their own decision in the
yes. And they have no idea what it's about, and they don't care. They're sure that they know. Okay, so the son had a procedure at the hospital. He says, you know, he's going to do it anyway. And so he did it, and I owe $200 left on the bill that the insurance isn't paying. I don't want to pay $200 after I just learned what kind of harm they have attempted to do. I want to write the hospital and tell them, look, I know what, you know, what kind of risk you have exposed him to. I'm not.
Well, I saw a tape with this doctor from England, and he said, I'm telling you, all the doctors and the nurses that are giving this vaccine,
uh-huh.
he said, they're all liable. He said, just like Nuremberg, them soldiers
okay.
that said, we were just following orders, that's
yeah.
not going to cut it. They're supposed to know better. I mean, are they asking, are they telling everybody that this is experimental? And then number two,
absolutely
are they asking their permission?
Not.
Did your son sign a permission slip?
They have no proof.
Right?
They told me if he wants the surgery, it's a requirement of the surgery. I said neither he nor I want this to happen. This is not informed consent.
Oh, that's a lawsuit right there.
And I even put it in writing to them.
They cannot require it because it's experimental.
They said if he wants the surgery, he's got to have it.
And that's their policy, but it turns out that their policy is against Nuremberg. And,
yep.
and whoever, you get that policy, get it in writing.
Yeah.
Can you get that in writing about having
Probably.
To have the shot?
Possibly.
I would get it because that's going to be something that if you go to court with, they can't even argue that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not much consolation, but it's probably worth millions of dollars. But what good's it do when you're dead, or your loved ones are dead? But there's going to be hell to pay on this thing, because mm-hmm. these doctors should ask more questions. They should know better.
Oh.
You know, they have a Hippocratic Oath, and they're all supposed to know that you don't do experimental stuff on people without their permission. This is an experiment. They have never used this kind of a shot on a human being ever. This is the first time.
That's right.
They have
that's right.
absolutely no idea what it's going to do. So if they tell you you have to take it, then you might as well be in Nazi Germany in one of the camps, because that's what that is.
After she told me, and at first I spoke to twice to the first person, and then they said, well, you have to get cleared with this person who's responsible. I spoke to her, and I said, this is not informed consent. He does not want to do it. She said, well, then there's no surgery. And I said, well, then you are not going. you are not doing the Hippocratic Oath, and I want you to know that. And, you know, and so, you know, my whole family says, oh, you know, it's his decision. I don't know. Anyway, so I wrote a letter following up telling them, you know, what my position was, that it was worthless as a test. This was not informed consent, and that I wanted this on record. And
yeah, you know, they got covered under the government so that they don't have any liability, supposedly.
Mm.
You know, with this.
And Cuomo is now going to jail, so the person who's been leading them is now going to be in jail.
Well, I hope he's going to jail anyway.
We don't.
They're immune, Gerard, if they're selling a vaccine. This is not a vaccine.
Well, that's the point I was going to make. They can't fall under that because this is an experiment.
You know, and,
but they specifically got new legislation that says COVID-19 shot. They patented everything on it. So they do have some kind of paperwork that says that they are not responsible for this particular shot. Mm-hmm. I don't think they've used the word vaccine even. You know, they specifically said COVID-19, this, you know, they gave the number and that, and they made sure they got separate legislation because I think they knew. They were going to be facing major, major lawsuits because, look, it's about population control. They want people to die. This is Bill Gates and Anthony Fauci.
Do you know? Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And they need to be drawn and quartered and hung and all that stuff.
Dr. McCullough says there's something called 15 U.S.C. 41 of the Federal Trade Commission Act, and it's the law that governs advertising of medical practices, and that so it's false advertising, and that this, you know, giving you a COVID test and saying that it's to see if you have COVID is a lie. Giving you this gene-altering thing, saying it's a vaccine, is a lie. They're breaking that for sure.
Yeah, so they're breaking so many laws. They're not going to be completely immune, no matter what they wrote on a piece of paper. I mean, look, one of the things that Hitler did was he changed laws. They had a constitution just like we do. So he'd go in there and he'd amend it and say, well, it's right here. It's in the law. Well, that doesn't mean anything. I mean, they're doing the same thing over here. It's unconstitutional. Just because he wrote it down doesn't give it authority, you know?
Creating harm
is always going to be against the law. So I don't know where it's all going to flush out, but I think they got a lot of liability, and I can't see them all getting away with it. I mean, I understand that some of the healthcare workers are ignorant, and they're just following orders, and they're almost invincibly ignorant.
They would never give me any answers. I would try to engage these people, these administrators, and they would give me this deaf, dumb, and blind thing. I mean, never a conversation. No answer is just say nothing is what.
Because they don't know themselves.
Yeah, but
they're ignorant. They're flying blind. They're putting something that they have no idea about anything into a bunch of people, and they don't know what it's going to do or anything. They've never tested it. And I don't know what they expect is going to happen, but it's not going to be good. I mean, we already know that they've determined that this thing is going to set you up for a cytostorm so that when the live virus hits you, your body's not going to be able to handle it. It's going to over react. It's going to be almost like an anaphylactic shock, and you're going to die of heart and, you know, cardiopulmonary disease. Blood clotting in the lungs. It's going to go in your lungs and eat the tissue and destroy them.
You know, Gerard, I think they're reprogramming your DNA, and I don't think they know exactly what it's going to do. That's
no.
My
of course they don't, but you know what? They're like the evil scientist. They've never used it on a human before. Now, I don't know that Bill Gates hasn't tied up some little kid in Africa and used it. You know, they probably did that, so maybe they do know. I don't know. You know, they're evil.
I wonder if the reason that they keep doing the same people over and over and over again is they're just seeing, wow, I wonder what it did since last time. Let's check the DNA. You know,
Well, they already know that this is going to screw you. It's a self-replicating. They're not giving you a virus. What they're doing is they're putting this thing in your DNA that produces the protein that produces. So your body's producing the virus. That's ass backwards from a vaccine. They take the virus and they put it in you, and your body makes antibodies. No. Yeah. This thing takes the protein, that's why it's in the DNA, and it actually makes the virus that the body's supposed to now produce antibodies against. Well, if your body's making antibodies against anything that your body's producing, you know what that's called? That's autoimmune disease.
Anytime
your body is fighting another part of your body, it's not natural. It's ridiculous. These guys, I mean, they can't be so stupid. Obviously, they're witches and warlocks, is all I can tell you.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? I'll probably go to jail tomorrow for talking like this on here, all this false information I'm putting out here. And this dangerous information that the shots are good. They'll be coming to my door tomorrow and arresting me. Anyway.
Well, thank you.
So I'm going to go. I didn't realize we had some more people in the chat because you were the last one, but we've picked up a couple and we got a few minutes. So I'm going to move and try to get through them. Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you, Gerard.
Yeah. Okay. Greg from Michigan, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
Good.
This is Greg in Detroit. Gerard, you were saying that the swab for the test of the virus gives you the vaccine. It actually gives you the virus.
Well,
it's been out since long before the vaccine, as they call it, was created. They give you the proteins or whatever through from the virus. That's true.
They have never
isolated it.
That's right. So how can they say that? So it's the same crap that's in the vaccine.
Well, yeah, it's
that's what it, I mean. It's a nanoparticle protein. There is no COVID. I found out tonight that there is no such thing as COVID-19. None. They've created it with their vaccines.
I've always heard, too, that they've never isolated it from the beginning. That's right. And, you know, when they test for it, they have a way to manipulate the test results by how many of these proteins that are present in the so-called virus, and they're present naturally in the human body anyway in different amounts, and say there's 5 or 6 of them. Well, if they want the positive results to be higher, they'll set the bar to where you only need to find 3 of these 5 or 6 possible proteins to say this person is positive and has the virus. If they want to make
turn the cycles up, and it means nothing.
Right. Well, it means that they're manipulating the information.
No, I mean the things that they're finding in you, the parts of that RNA that they're finding, don't mean anything.
Right. They're already there.
They're so small and so few of them.
If they want more negative results to show, if they want to claim they have evidence that what they've been doing has been making the numbers go down, they'll say to the testers, okay, now we require 5 of the 6 proteins to be present, and if the test doesn't show traces of 5 of them, then they're negative. Whereas a week earlier, they might have said, we want
the cases are going down. The cases are going down not because people are not getting it anymore. They're going down because they've turned the cycles up.
Right. However, they want to manipulate it, and they'll continue to do that.
The emperor has no clothes, for sure, is what it is. And, you know, they want everybody to wear masks because the masks are unhealthy. And what happens is they don't want this thing to go away overnight. And if everybody took their mask off, it would go away. At least with the mask, they're getting enough positive tests that they can pretend like it's still out there. because that mass keeps reinfecting you. It's not good. Plus, it's like a petri dish. So everybody that wears a mask, a cloth mask, you're not using sterile procedure, taking it off. You're touching the mask. You're touching your face. You're touching the money. You're touching this. You're touching that. You couldn't do that in the hospital. That's ridiculous. Because the mask is actually an area of concentration. And when you take that thing off, just like when you take surgical gloves off, you don't touch the outside. You're supposed to turn them inside out, you know, with your two little fingers and throw it into a sterile bag. Nobody's doing that. So they're actually making the virus worse because you cough and it goes inside your mask. Then you have an itch and you reach up and scratch your nose up in there and you just scratched on all the stuff that you got in there growing for 3, 4, 5, 10 hours. And now it's on your finger and now you're going to touch somebody else and they're going to pick it up. So they're actually making it worse.
Right.
That man. Look, during the pandemics in the turn of the century, they started using masks, and they did studies, and they found out that the cases of infection went up some crazy number. I can't even quote it because it was like 1,800% or something just from putting masks on. And it lowered the herd immunity, and it caused more spreading. They know all this stuff.
They're right, they do. And I've read recently where they say most of the people that have ever tested positive were people who frequently wore masks.
Right, they're getting more positive tests on the frequent mask
wearers. People who wear masks, yeah.
Look, we got to never, ever, ever allow them ever to require us to wear masks. And there's so many reasons why it's bad. Not just for your health, but for demoralizing you and defacing you and making you less of a human being.
Well, there are some people that say it's a symbol, like it's a cult symbol. You know, I don't know if you've
ever heard. Well, it is because early on, I was researching it, and I went in and I called Walmart and I said, look, I got a health condition. I can't wear the mask. And they said, well, we have these facilitators. Go see one of them when you come in, and we'll take care of you. And I thought they were maybe going to go get my groceries or something. I didn't know what they were going to do. And I found out because I didn't even have to go in because another lady told the same story. And they said, and she went in, and she saw the facilitator, and the facilitator takes her in the back room, and she hands her this mask. She said, I told you I can't wear a mask, though. I have a condition. She said, wear it on your neck. There you go. So that means I'm compliant, but I can't wear it. But she's gonna have her wear it on her neck, so that she's like subservient to it, right?
Sure. She's kind of going along to.
I want to wear it on my forehead, or on my head, or maybe I want to wear it like a diaper. Is that okay too? Because COVID comes out of that end too. I understand. So
I want to wear it up around my upper arm, like an arm.
There you go. Yeah, it says you have to wear it. It doesn't say wear, does it?
Right. And, you know, have you ever heard or read that they're saying that this vaccine is also designed to make both young women and also young men as well sterile? Have you ever heard
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the first thing that it does.
And that's a...
And if you're pregnant, women are having what do you call it? Where the baby miscarriages? Exactly.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. Very terrible thing that's being done. And regarding the government making it mandatory, you know, from the way it seems to me, I don't believe that the government will have to do that. They're going to leave that up to the corporations.
Exactly, that's their plan. They're not going to make it mandatory, you know.
No, but it will.
They're going to make it so you can't travel, you can't go to the store, you can't do this, you can't do that.
Right.
And the only one that's going to fix that is we the people. Because we'll fix it by civil disobedience, by either not shopping there or by going there in force with 500 people and go shopping with our guns and force them to take our money with no mask on or whatever it takes. Or just go in and take the groceries and say, guess what? If we don't want to shop in here, we're taking the groceries because it's necessary for our lives. You know, and after you tie up a couple of Walmart store managers and people, and they'll get the message. You know, you can't do this stuff unless you're in mass. You know what I'm saying? You can't protest unless there's a lot of people, because you try to go in and fight them just like you try to fight a cop with a traffic ticket on the side of the road. Well, guess what? You're going to get your head busted and you're going to end up in jail.
Right,
so
I'm
not telling you to do. I'm just telling you that it's going to take mass civil disobedience, and I'm not even saying violent. I mean, look at what Gandhi did. He did passive civil disobedience, and he wore the English down. Britain left because they couldn't handle all those people. There were millions of people that were in his marches, in his sit-ins and stuff.
Right.
You know, and we can do the same thing, but you know, people got to do it, and they're not going to do it until they're fed up.
No, you're right. Well, right now, I mean, to me, I mean, just like this election steal being allowed to stand. Why is that? Well, you know, we're not the greatest generation, like Tom Brokaw referred to, you know, our parents who put the effort in as civilians to support the war effort during World War II. We've got our heat on. We've got our air conditioning. We've got all kinds of food in the fridge. We've got stupid stuff like Judge Judy and the Kardashians and The Bachelor and all that crap to watch on TV all the time. We're comfortable enough to where, as long as we have all these things at our disposal to be comfortable with and enjoy our, you know, passing time with, we're not going to get out in the streets and protest and demonstrate and take risks.
No, people only do that when they're actually hungry.
Right.
And actually, our parents were no better than we are, because they weren't informed either. If they realized that all these wars they were fighting was only for the bankers, these wars were not just World War I. Okay, maybe when Japan came over and attacked us, but we goaded them into that. There was all this false flag operation to get us into the war.
No, but you know what? You still have to give that generation. I mean, my mother was a...
Oh, yeah. I could still work circles around my kids. So what's that tell you?
What's that?
I said I could still work circles around my boys. You know, I'm 63, and I have more drive than they do, because it has to do with because I'm closer to my parents when I was the way they were raised.
Right, right. You know? So you still have to give them credit, even though they may have been deceived about, you know, what really caused the war and what it was really about. You know, they believed that they had to put forth a unified effort together for us to win, and they did that a lot more easily than people of this younger generation will now, unfortunately.
But they always, if they want a war, they will whip the young men up into a frenzy. They know how to do that. These guys will jump on the line and stick their guns on their shoulders and march off. If you ever read Mark Twain, what he wrote about war and how they can always get the men to go. And he wrote that poem about, you know, while you're over there in the churches and you're doing all this stuff and the girls with their bows are kissing the guys goodbye, just remember, on the other side is somebody else's son that your son is sent to kill.
Right.
I'm
not questioning that. I'm not questioning that. Our problem now is domestic enemies.
That's what people have a hard time getting their head around.
I don't see it. No. I don't see people rising up to take on the domestic enemies here. That's the problem. That's why we're losing our republic.
Right.
And that's why our Constitution is dying. But maybe they'll come around before it's too late. I don't know. But our military is doing a perfectly good job, I think, regarding keeping the foreign enemies at bay, at least for the most part.
Well, they got to start arresting the domestic enemies, though. Look, I don't think there's a political solution for this. I think it's military. I think they need to arrest them, and they need to put them under military tribunals, because you can't get a trial anywhere. You know, what are you going to do? You're going to arrest Hillary Clinton and try her in the Southern District? They own all the judges and all the prosecutors, and they got the goods on everybody. So, Trump got elected by 70 million people, and I don't know how many million people showed up at the White House when he told everybody to march. They're afraid of that.
Well,
they don't even know how many. They didn't count them. A lot of people didn't even get in there. There was cars all the way down the road that never even made it because they couldn't get there.
Oh, I can believe it. Sure, I don't doubt it.
But that was him showing his power to them. Come to the Capitol. He did it purposely because he knew that it would shake them up. And look, he could turn around. He could turn around tomorrow and say, "I want all you people that went. Look, these guys are domestic enemies, and you need to get your guns and you're the militia and go there and shoot them and get rid of them." And they would do it. I'm telling you, he has that power, whether you know it or not. And that's why they hate him so much.
Yeah,
they don't. And you think if Schumer got up there and said, "Come on," that anybody would even show up? Or Biden.
No, I know. Well, we might need Trump to do that because I don't know what else is going to turn this around. And if the military doesn't start doing something soon, I don't see Trump coming back in. And we've talked about this before. I mean, it's going to take the military to put him back in, and hopefully they're going to do that. But, you know, day after day passes, and so far, we're not.
No, because I'm telling you why, because there's a process, and we can't talk about it now, maybe next week. But there's a definite plan, and it's going according to plan, and it seems slow, but it needs to be. There's certain things that they have to do first, second, and third, because this thing is so big. I mean, don't forget, this cabal is worldwide. It's every. He's working with China and Russia. And what do you call it? What's that little man there? Not Cuba, the other one there.
What, Israel?
No.
China, Russia.
The little fat man. that. Oh, come on. It's not Cuba. It's the other island nation there, the 45th parallel.
I'm not sure.
You know what I mean. He's been a pain in the neck. The little guy, his sister killed the brother. They're all terrible over there. But anyway, he is the first president that went in there, and he made a peace agreement with him, because what he did is he went to every nation, he went to China and and he went to whatever that guy's name is, and he said, "Listen, you want to be a real leader? I'll make you a real leader. We'll get the CIA out of your mouth."
North Korea, is that where you're talking
right,
about?
Right, North Korea, exactly, right, because okay. It wasn't. So he said, "I'll make you a real leader. We'll kick the CIA out, and you'll be a leader, and you'll be sovereign, and you'll be able to make your own laws. You just can't mess with us, that's all, because we'll bomb the crap out of you." So it's art of the deal, man, and he did it, and so that's what's going on.
Well, and there's a lot of legalities, too, to be worried about, I guess. I've heard people say that. He doesn't want it to be, you know, an overthrow and him put back in office to be, you know, legally challenged on any serious merits. He wants to make sure that he covers his bases there. That's what I hear some people say.
Look, he could have stayed there, did the Insurrection Act, had him arrest three-quarters of the Congress because they got the goods on all of them. They've all got problems, big, big problems, and he has it. But the trouble with that was, is you got so many brainwashed people, they would think that he was being a dictator, and there would be bloodshed in the street, and that's what he doesn't want.
All right.
So he's trying to get everybody to see what they're like. Look at, people's eyes have opened up so much since he walked away. I was mad that he walked away, but I see what they did with Biden and overturning all his executive orders, and gasoline's going to go up and food's going to go up, and they're going to make us suffer some pain before they come in and rescue our asses, because if not, it won't work. People are going to have to be ticked off enough, and that's what's going to happen.
Right. People are going to have to be supportive of Trump coming back.
That's right. You're going to see, and which there are. Look, at a third of the country is supportive. But
we
what
need
do you
two thirds.
That's right, and that's what I think is going on. But look, we're way over time. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I got two people in the queue, but I'm gonna. It's already. What time is it?
About 10 after 12. 12
10 after. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we'll get them
all
next
right,
week.
Thank you much, and
yeah.
You guys have a good night.
Okay, you too, everybody. God
Bye-bye.
Bless. Say your prayers, because it's important right now. We're going through some very, very trying times and very dangerous times, because the cabal is like a, you know, what happens when you put a wild animal in a quarter? That's what they attack. and they don't care what they got to do. And so that's what, you know, you could see some false flag attacks out of this. So just beware and make sure that you got some supplies because, you know, electric could go down. Who knows? I don't know. It could be civil unrest. So just be prudent. Make sure your cupboards are full and your tanks are filled. Okay, have a good day and night, and we'll see you next week.